So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Hey, look at this! Donald Trump! Oh, my God! The hostile takeover of Donald Trump on Vince McMahon has happened at WrestleMania 23.
I didn't think he would do it. I just was suggesting it, but Donald Trump did it. He laid hands upon... Oh, wait a minute.
A loss of ducks. Don't call. Starters and Mamba. Oh, Moxley with a spear. Moxley with a spear. Will it be? Yes, it is. Moxley wins.
Here is your winner, Bobby Moxley.
And the realization of losing his hair has just engulfed Mr. McMahon.
This barber chair that must have belonged to a mighty bad barber.
Please don't cut my hair.
Straps for your arms.
Please, I don't deserve this.
And a seatbelt for your waist.
I don't deserve this, gentlemen.
One billionaire saving another billionaire's head.
And King, one of the great mysteries of life, has just been discovered. It was Mr. McMahon's real hair all along. Well, WrestleMania 23 may be all grown up, but Mr. McMahon's hair has been all cut off.
Got a devil's haircut in my mind. Got a devil's haircut in my mind. Got a devil's haircut in my mind. Got a devil's haircut in my mind.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting, and it is April 2nd, 2007, and last night WrestleMania 23 took place from Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan. And Wei, I've got to say, I think Steve Austin's coming out of retirement, clearly based on that finish. So I think WrestleMania 24 next year could be really big with Steve Austin.
Wow, you think so, eh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's only the year 2007, so really, I think anything can happen. I mean, I certainly don't see, the WWE relying on their past superstars for too long? Probably not, you know. But I say next year we could probably make an exception.
Actually, I'm talking of someone that has probably 9 years more experience than I do in 2007, so let me correct that. Welcome to Review Away. I'm John, and that's probably how I would sound in 2007, doing a show.
That's not true. I don't think
probably
so.
Probably a lot of ums.
No, that's not true. I think we actually started this. No, we didn't. We didn't start it that long. But I'm sure there are plenty of recordings of you back then, and I don't think you sound like
that. Oh, there are. There are. I went back to listen because from The Law that night, Dan Lavransky, who we're going to hear from later on the show, we've got Dan Lavransky from 2007, from the Time Machine. He attended WrestleMania 23, so we will hear him because myself and Jason Agnew co-hosted The Law that night, and I assume you were there because that was your call screening days.
I would assume so as well, but I have no recollection.
Well, you were. I can confirm. You were there, so we all watched it together.
Cool.
On April the 1st of 2007. There's a lot to get to in this particular review, Wei. This is our big review of WrestleMania 23. I guess let's get into it here. We watched the Go Home Raw last week. You can go back and...
Oh, that's it? No banter?
Well, what do you want to chat about?
Oh, my God. I don't know. I just expect.
I feel like a clock is... There's a countdown clock.
No, there isn't. I expected some, you know, some mood setting. You can't just dive right in.
Well, Wei.
This is WrestleMania here. We need WrestleMania-level banter.
Wei, what is your opinion of saliva? Ladies and gentlemen being the theme song. I will say, I don't think they overdid it, but the... Because watching this, I actually have this on DVD. I think they sent it to us. I cannot recall, but I've got this on DVD. So I watched half on the DVD and then I watched the rest on the network. So I don't know if there were certain rights issues. I certainly heard the saliva song, but it wasn't like plastered all over the show to the point that most WWE shows, I despise whatever theme it is by the end of those 3 hours.
Didn't they have another theme? Was this the only one they had, or was this like a two theme year? Was it not? It doesn't matter. I wasn't that sick of it. I mean, honestly, I feel like this song, the Saliva song, I feel like they've used maybe like 5 times for 5 different shows.
It's all different songs. Perhaps kind of.
That's how generic
Saliva. You know. It's all branches of the same song.
Yeah. So that's I think at this point I just kind of tuned it out into the background. Didn't even really notice it all that much.
Yes, we had Ladies and Gentlemen was the title song, and then the music that ended the show with that montage was The Memory Will Never Die by Default.
Oh, boy. Canadian band.
Yes, which I believe their one hit was Wasting My Time.
Yeah, classic.
I'm wasting my time.
Yep.
What an awful song. What a...
Whoa, come on, it's not awful.
What a stupid band name.
Why? What's so stupid about
that? There's a lot of WrestleManias where it would be more appropriate to use that other song, but this was not one of them. This was a legitimately successful WrestleMania.
Well, I don't think you can ever look at the WWE's choice of pay-per-view music as sort of any type of indicator of taste-making. And certainly in 2007, bands like Saliva and Default were perhaps at the peak of their... generic music choices. But like, I'm curious to know, like, were these all part of like a record label agreement that they had with a certain record label? I know they did a bunch of things with Wind Up Records, which is like Finger Eleven's,
yes,
label. But like bands like Default and Saliva, were they part of something else or what?
I just always thought they had a relationship with Saliva because, I mean, they did Batista's theme. Mm-hmm. They did, I mean, Saliva. They performed live at the Sky Dome at WrestleMania.
Yep.
That year we went.
Oh, yeah, and with Drowning Pool.
With Drowning Pool.
Wait, am I right?
Yes, Drowning Pool and Saliva, they all played live at the Sky Dome. I remember once meeting Finger Eleven, and it was right after that Forcible Entry CD came out, and I remember asking...
How did you meet them?
My friends, we were in high school, and my friends were downtown. They were massive Finger Eleven fans, and I listened to them, but I wasn't a giant fan, and they were like, hey, we're chilling at the Eaton Center. You want to meet up? So I met up with my friends, and they were like, we're going to meet Finger Eleven at the Sunrise Records. And I was like, okay, cool, I'll come along. So I was just in line. I didn't really care to meet them. So we got up. My friends got their autographs, and I had to go through. So I was like, I don't have anything to sign, but did you guys enjoy your contribution? That was all I wanted to ask them. I'm like, what did you think of the Forcible Entry CD?
You at least wanted
because
to get it.
on the back of the CD, their song,
They did the Kane song.
They did the Kane song, and I think it wasn't listed on the back.
Oh.
It was a track that wasn't listed. And I remember the one guy was like, oh, I hated that name, Forcible Entry. What an awful name for a CD. And I was like, well, when you put it that way, it probably is like a pretty...
It actually is pretty bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And that is my Finger Eleven interaction.
It also contained the Chris Benoit theme song. How about that?
That said...
I think.
That's right. Yeah. So... One thing, right? They did that video for...
Oh, come on. You want to talk about the Finger Eleven classics?
The Finger
One
Eleven
thing,
classics.
There's a...
Whatever.
Oh, what the... Yeah.
That was Benoit.
Oh, that was the Benoit thing. What about the... Fuck, I can't think of any.
The classics for Finger Eleven, just in general?
Finger Eleven classics.
Good Times.
Good Times.
They had that song. I like that song.
Like,
first time?
I feel like my knowledge of much music from 2005 is failing me. Okay, whatever. This is
the banter you wanted, what?
Paralyzer.
Is that I hated that song. Yeah, that was them too. I hated that song.
Whatever is not them. It's
Our Lady Peace. I'm confusing my Canadian bands. You're right. You said the Benoit theme, and I thought of them.
Drag You Down?
Yes, Drag You Down.
I like that one. I'll keep your memory vague.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I have no idea. Okay, anyway.
It's a Finger Eleven.
Yeah, great. Cool.
All right.
This is the WrestleMania level banter.
This is This is a big, big preamble to our WrestleMania 3 discussion. We should get into this. You know how many pages of notes I have on this show, Wei? 85.
This is a long show.
It was a very long show. To the point that on this DVD, the reason I switched over, the show is broken up onto two discs.
Yep. This was, I only have the video file, but this was like over 3 hours, like over 3.5 hours.
Did you watch this on the network?
I watched it partially, and then our network subscription is, I think, something's off with it right now, so I couldn't log in, so I didn't watch it on somebody else's network.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you were able to track it down. Mm-hmm. This show was, the main event of this show was Donald Trump and Vince McMahon. Despite placement on the show, that was the main event that particular year.
We could tell from last week's review that certainly received the most.
It was
promotion.
The A program.
Yeah.
And this show ended up doing 1,250,000 buys worldwide, which was a new record for the company at that point in 2007, and a significant jump from WrestleMania 22 the prior year, which had done in the neighborhood of 900,000 buys, give or take. The actual attendance for this, 74,287, and a gate of 5.38 million in Detroit.
Wow.
So not a bad night for them.
Yeah.
They announced 80,000, not that far inflated by WWE standards. I mean, they only created 6,000 invisible people.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Which I guess.
You round up to the.
When you include the wrestlers that worked on the show and the reporters.
6,000.
And the people that were wandering in the parking lot that were just walking home from work, maybe.
People driving on the.
You probably hit 80,000 somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. People that were text messaging their friends, the person on the receiving end kind of was there.
All right.
So, anyway, Lillian Garcia. Oh, did you watch the special bonus tag team lumberjack match, which was the first time ever they kept noting to us? A first time ever bonus?
That I did not.
Would you like to know what happened?
Of course.
This was on the DVD portion. Ric Flair and Carlito. That's right. Ric Flair, the man who would be the star of WrestleMania 24, was in the first time ever special bonus tag team lumberjack match. Teaming with Carlito against Gregory Helms and cruiserweight champion Chavo Guerrero. And our lumberjacks included a who's who of the WWE forgotten during this time period. William Regal, Dave Taylor, Lance Cade, Trevor Murdoch, The Miz, Snitsky, Charlie Haas, Shelton Benjamin. I don't know who this was. Jamie Noble. I misspelled his name. Jim Duggan was here. I'm not going to go through all of them here, but there was quite the collection of characters here, Wei, right down to Funaki and Eugene.
Wow.
Getting his WrestleMania dark match moment.
Who would Jim Duggan hang out with amongst that crowd?
On the roster?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Who would he ride with?
Maybe Dave Taylor.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Some hard men from back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know how Jim Duggan would necessarily fit in with this crew. Viscera was out here. Mm-hmm. Super Crazy. Deuce and Domino. There were way more lumberjacks than there were, it appeared to be, people in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely an overstatement.
Those are the 6,000.
Ric Flair and Carlito against Helms and Chavo Guerrero. This featured Michael Cole and JBL on commentary. Chavo got knocked to the floor and then was sent back in by Snitsky. They got the advantage on Carlito after he was sent to the floor in return. They double-teamed Carlito. Flair got tagged in. Back body drops to Helms and Guerrero, and then Helms thwarted a figure four attempt by Flair. Guerrero then missed with a frog splash. Carlito came in with a spinning elbow off the middle rope, and Helms came back with a back body drop, got sent to the floor, and then Carlito blocked the three amigos by Guerrero after the first one and hit a backstabber to pin Chavo. 6 minutes and 38 seconds.
How about that?
And would you have predicted, Wei, on WrestleMania 2007 day, that Ric Flair would have an incredible send-off 1 year later? This guy who couldn't even get on the main card in 07 and was very much just a forgotten figure in 2007, because right up until the weekend, as I recall, it was touch and go if Flair and Carlito would get onto the actual main card, and instead they were placed on the dark match portion.
In hindsight, I don't think it's all that surprising. I feel like Ric Flair's pro wrestling run, you know, in the 2000s in the WWE was largely as an accessory. You know, the occasional, he was the GM, and then he was the manager, and then he sometimes wrestled. But the fact that they made such a big deal of the retirement, which is really, I think, the only story you could still tell with Ric Flair at that point in his career, I think, you know, was great that they decided to at least take advantage of that.
Think about this. Ric Flair is going to have a more prominent spot at this year's WrestleMania than he did in 2007 as an active performer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll at least be on the main portion this year with the women's match.
But, you know, really physically, I think even at this point, he had kind of outlived his welcome, you know what I mean, as an active performer.
So then we get into WrestleMania proper here with the opening video with all the WrestleMania logos from the first one up until the last. And they are returning to Detroit all growing up. So the idea is, I guess WrestleMania 1 was the act of intercourse.
What?
And this was a prolonged... The baby was not officially born until WrestleMania 3.
I don't know about that. I'd say 1 is 1.
Okay, let's say that... Okay, then when Vince purchased the WWWF, that was intercourse.
Okay.
WrestleMania 1 was the birth. WrestleMania 3 was maybe its first words, its loudest words, in front of the Pontiac Silverdome crowd. And now they are a grown-up.
Yes. Yes.
They are now turning 23.
The idea also has a lot to do with Detroit, right?
And of course.
The fact that they're returning back to Detroit. Last time WrestleMania visited Detroit, it was all but a toddler. And now it's come back, and Detroit sees WrestleMania. And WrestleMania, you're so big. You're so tall. You're all grown up.
You're all grown up. Yeah. And that was the entire campaign for WrestleMania 23 that we went over last week. And they showed the opening shot, the very famous visual of Vince McMahon at WrestleMania 3 in his big tux with Howard Finkel in the corner, introducing Aretha Franklin. And they used Vince McMahon's 1987 introduction and voiceover to cut to the 2007 Ford Field audience, once again introducing Aretha Franklin to sing America the Beautiful and tie the two together.
Yeah, and I'm sure they considered actually having Vince out there doing the introduction, but given the circumstance of him participating in the show's matches as the Vince McMahon character, I'm glad they didn't have him out there.
Well, what ties it into today was there was also a push for Shane McMahon to do that spot in 2007, and it was shot down, and they went with this.
Hmm.
And I cannot say that was necessarily... I mean, that was more so symbolic of stating that that is a visual you very much associate. Vince McMahon's national expansion was that day in 1987, him in the ring in front of all of these people. I mean, that was a really big statement.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of putting Shane McMahon in that spot, you very much are telling the audience, this is the natural successor. And that was not necessarily the plan.
Yeah.
So Shane would be on this show, and we will get into that later. So Aretha Franklin is introduced. She sings America the Beautiful. And then we go into our second of two opening videos for WrestleMania with the various talent where they would get their scripts and they would repeat lines over and over, such as when we were young, when we were young. And they shot all of the younger versions of John Cena and Steve Austin, Batista.
That's the match I wanted to see, actually.
This is the WWE Network show I want to see.
Yeah.
Children of WWE as when they were young. And it all ends with saying, I am a champion, which was accurate because they had three world champions at this point. So you could have a plural, I am a world champion or I am the champion. And the voiceover, to my very, very happy smile, said, welcome to the 23rd annual WrestleMania, as we go into the Saliva theme music. The 23rd annual. Is that so fucking hard?
Annual.
It was not the 23rd anniversary. Yeah. It was the 23rd annual.
Mm-hmm.
Simple word replacement. And I'm the happiest person in the world. Big pyro opening. And immediately, Jerry Lawler notes, like the first thing, welcome to the show, blah, blah, blah. There are more people here than the Super Bowl held in the same stadium. Just a big, fuck you, NFL. Welcome to WrestleMania 23. And that was a legitimate statement. They did have more people here than Super Bowl 40.
And the field's bigger than a wrestling ring.
Yes. We're not going to compare the gate But people-wise, yes. And Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are the commentary team on Raw. Michael Cole and JBL at JBL's peak commentary run, in my opinion, were the SmackDown team and Joey Styles and Taz manning the ECW booth. So we kick things off with the Money in the Bank ladder match. Jeff Hardy, King Booker, Finlay, CM Punk, Mr. Kennedy, Matt Hardy, Randy Orton, and Edge. Eight men in the ring, six men calling the match.
Yeah.
Always a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They needed Quentin Jackson here on color commentary. He would have been great. Do you know how many motherfuckers he would have been accusing of as they lifted a foreign object behind a referee's back? And it was legal here, which was his big question. Is this legal? Mm-hmm. Quentin Jackson. Kennedy came out. You could see certainly a big focus on him because they had to race through some of these entrances. Finlay was like, or Booker rather, he was not even halfway down the ramp before Finlay's music hit. I mean, they were just, get out there, get out there. But Kennedy got the mic drop at the entrance, got to do his intro. I mean, certainly this year in particular, I think you could look at Kennedy and Punk as kind of right at that next level. And I think Edge you could have looked at as a possible winner here, or Orton, but those were kind of the ones that, that stood out the most. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of momentum for CM Punk, as we saw in last week's Raw. I mean, he was not pushed at the same level of the response he was getting, but there was certainly kind of that groundswell support for CM Punk at this time. So the match begins. Everyone goes to the floor, and it is Finlay with a high cross to all of them. And Jim Ross brings up that Edge is 5-0 at WrestleMania. The streak of Edge.
Did this break that streak?
It would have to. He lost the match.
Yeah, I guess.
Great heat early for Jeff climbing, and then Booker pulls out this miniature ladder and looks all confused, and Punk uses that as a weapon. Edge then launches this mini ladder at CM Punk's head, and they explain that this is Hornswoggle's ladder, and at this time, Hornswoggle was simply identified as Finley's bastard. The little bastard.
Mm-hmm. Though they did have a name for him.
Yes.
They just never used it.
The little bastard.
Everything was happening really fast here from the get-go. And within minutes, you had CM Punk already blading from this mini ladder shot to the head.
Yeah, I don't even know if he was blading. He might have just been rocked with that ladder to the head. There was a lot of just insane spots here with these ladders being used as weapons on
guys. Yeah, and it was clear from the get-go that this was not your storytelling type of ladder match. This was going to be your, you know, hit me really hard in the head multiple times in the head.
Yeah. The Hardys worked together on Edge. They set up the teeter-totter spot with JBL bringing up the recent injury that Joey Mercury suffered at the Armageddon show, which destroyed his face. And actually, the timing of this, Joey Mercury had actually just been released over the prior week because of certain drug issues he was having. Matt takes a vertical suplex from Edge onto the ladder. Kennedy then hits the Kenton bomb, but misses Matt and lands on the ladder. The landing on his neck. He came off the top with this swanton, and it was his neck that landed on the ladder. This was cringeworthy.
It looked awful. I mean, oh. I'm assuming he was supposed to land on his upper back instead of
his neck took
his
all
head,
of this.
It looked really risky.
And then he's laying there, and Jeff goes up and hits a swanton to Kennedy. Edge does a sequence spearing everyone until there's Punk left, and he misses Punk running into the corner turnbuckle, and Punk does the Terry Funk spot, spinning the ladder on his shoulders. Edge then spears a group of them to lots of boos. Edge was very much over as a heel here in front of this crowd. Edge gets placed on a ladder that is draped between the barricade and the apron, and this was a big spot in the match where Jeff climbs up the big ladder, comes off from in the ring to leg drop Edge and break the ladder. Both are dead. Edge gets stretchered out. This was the end of Edge in the match. And to my recollection, I mean, they've done this broken ladder spot a lot, but this is the first time I recall it in the WWE where they did a broken ladder spot here, and it looked
insane.
Yes.
I mean, it was the end of Jeff Hardy as well.
Yeah, both were gone at this point and explained Edge being taken out of the match.
Yeah, this leg drop just, you know, knowing kind of the extent of Edge's injuries, And even Jeff Hardy's.
This was really hard to watch.
A little tough to watch now, and I wonder if they'll even allow a spot like this today.
Yeah, I mean, they did do some... I remember last year with the Luke Harper powerbomb spot to Dean Ambrose, but you're right. Spots like this, I think that there's also a certain numbness.
They're just so careful these days about smaller things.
Well, yeah, and I think the audience, they've seen this so much that... Right. I don't think you get this kind of a reaction today because it has been done a lot, and is the risk really worth the short-term reward that you're going to have from the audience?
I think audiences will still react huge to these things, to a spot like this. But you're right. Like, can the company afford to take these risks right now?
So then Orton gets involved. He hit an RKO to Matt, then one to Finley, Kennedy, and then Punk stops him. And Taz notes how they aren't lining up the ladders underneath the briefcases. And he's questioning what they're climbing to here. They're not lined up. Edge is taken out. Orton hits an RKO to Punk off the ladder, then tries one to Booker. That gets countered into a bookend off of the ladder. And then Booker is climbing, and Matt grabs Charmel and threatens her with a twist of fate. This is the baby face.
Yeah.
If you climb, I will assault your wife. And Booker, the heel, comes to the aid of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
2007 psychology. Finley then stops Matt, and he's bleeding from the top of his head, so who knows what hit him, and would not be the only guy to get the top of his head sliced on this show. And he hit the Celtic Cross to Matt on the top of the ladder. Hornswoggle then appears and does get a bit of a reaction here from this Detroit crowd. He goes to climb. Kennedy returns. Hornswoggle punches him, and Kennedy grabs Hornswoggle, puts him on his shoulders on the ladder, and hits the rolling fireman's carry, the Lambeau plunge off the ladder. And Way, I don't know if you recall this, but I sure as hell do. When you and I and Jay were watching this in 2007, we were just watching this spot, and no one said anything, and Way, you go, is that even legal? Like, assaulting a midget.
Did I say that?
Then we got a run-in by Hornswoggle, who ran in. Kennedy gave them a Kenton bomb off of the ladder, in which our call screener, Way, gave the most logical question, is this legal in life?
Yes. Is it legal to beat up a small person?
You definitely 100% said that, because me and Agnew roared in laughter at your reply to this spot.
Doing
where
my Quentin Jackson impression.
Yeah. Is this even legal? And Kennedy put Hornswoggle out with this Lambeau plunge off the ladder. Punk and Kennedy then fought on the ladder. Kennedy got kicked off, but then Kennedy knocks him off with another ladder. Kennedy climbs, and he grabs the briefcase at 19 minutes and 9 seconds. And I think it was appropriate that he was climbing a ladder and reached a certain height, because that is what April 1st, 2007 was in the career of Ken Kennedy Anderson.
Hmm.
This was the high point of his career. Hmm. Wouldn't even cash in this briefcase because he ended up being misdiagnosed with an injury. And Edge ended up getting the briefcase back and cashing it in and getting the title.
Mm-hmm.
And that really was Kennedy's peak moment, was this Money in the Bank ladder match.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly felt like this whole match was kind of centered around his win. Punk got a lot of great reaction as well, but certainly it felt like Mr. Kennedy was the star to be made out of this whole thing. The whole thing was about 20 minutes. It felt like it might have been almost laid out for 30, as the whole thing felt really rushed from beginning to end. Perhaps that was the intent with the style at the time, but certainly there wasn't much breathing room for a lot of the spots to sink in. I'd say the six-man commentary booth didn't really help that fact either. I couldn't really sense any type of story being told within the body of the match. It was very much a spot fest, got a lot of oohs and ahs. And, you know, at that, it was a very entertaining spectacle type of match, but I wouldn't rank it near kind of the TLC era classics in terms of memorable moments or creativity of spots. And, but a lot of kind of nice looking, dangerous looking spots.
What's the ideal number for one of these matches? I think 8 is too many.
For people?
People in the match.
We've seen, like, four-way tag teams before. 8 is too many. I'd say 6. you know, six is a good number.
I think that you can do it with a number. I think with eight, it allows guys to at least get a breather and disappear for an extended amount of time. But I think that can also be done with six. I think six, at most seven, because eight just, it felt like at least one, if not two, too many.
Yes, too many.
That was the best use of too many maybe ever.
Oh, nice.
And, of course, one of the featured performers of the Money in the Bank ladder match was CM Punk. This was technically his second WrestleMania after he was part of John Cena's entrance the year prior in Chicago. But first match at WrestleMania, and a few weeks before WrestleMania in 2007, he joined Dan Lavransky on the Law to discuss WrestleMania 23 and competing in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Here is that interview from 2007.
Our next guest competes Sunday, April the 1st in the Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania 23 in Detroit. At Ford Field. He's had a great indie career, part of Ring of Honor, now part of the WWE, and a pleasure to have him here on the Law for the very first time, CM Punk. How are you, brother?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. I guess you're liking your spot at WrestleMania more this year than you did last year.
Yeah, a little bit. It's just funny how much a difference a year makes, isn't it?
It is, because last year you were one of the gangsters that came out with Cena, right?
Yes, I was.
That's unbelievable. Can we talk a little bit about how you got started in wrestling? I always find that interesting to see how guys get started.
Well, I always wanted to be a wrestler when I was a kid. You know, a huge fan growing up. And I think I was 17 or 18, you know, and I had always, everything was wrestling to me. You know, I'd goof around in the backyard with my friends, you know, we'd always watch pay-per-views. And
right.
It would always, you know, spill into... You know, the living room, we always break stuff and throw each other around. And, you know, you just get, like, pumped up from watching a good pay-per-view and, you know, you just wind up beating each other up and stuff like that. And I just, you know, one day I just took it seriously and I started looking around at wrestling schools in Chicago. And there would always be local guys at, like, the Rosemont Horizon, which is now known as the Allstate Arena.
Right.
There'd always be local wrestlers, like, standing around, you know, when you go to the WWE house shows. And I remember one guy one time handed me a card, and it was for the Steel Domain, which was the wrestling school that he ran. And I went there, and the rest is history. You know, it's like, yeah, anything in life, you want to learn how to do a trade, you got to go to school for it.
It's very true.
That's exactly what I did.
Very, very true. I want to talk a little bit about your time in Ring of Honor. I know our time is short here, but I gotta guess that it's tough going from a promotion where you're kind of one of the main event stars, and then going to a new promotion where you've kind of got to start all over again.
Well, I mean, it's tough in the sense that I kind of had more freedom in Ring of Honor, but you know, that's to be expected. You know, I think you start a new job anywhere. You know, you're the new guy.
Right.
You can't come in and call the shots unless you're the boss. You know, and I'm not the boss, so you know, I come in and luckily I've worked. I've been wrestling for, you know, 10 years. I've worked a lot of places. I know a lot of little tricks of the trade and stuff like that, and this is just one part of the job, you know? It's like, I don't mind coming in and, you know, and being the low man on the totem pole. To me, the character CM Punk, the whole I'm addicted to competition, that's true.
Right.
You know, I love it. I love challenges. I love being put to the test. You know, you throw a roadblock in front of me, I'll get around it. You know, I'll be a complete smartass to you when I do it, like I told you so, but, you know, I'm going to do it. And I can't complain with the way my WWE career has gone so far. I mean,
right.
I haven't been on TV an entire year yet, and, you know, I'm in WrestleMania, and I'm in a pretty high-profile match.
You are in one of the high-profile matches at Mania, definitely. How about actual in-ring style? Because, again, Ring of Honor, known for longer matches, and here, certainly working on the ECW TV show, you have to keep those matches short. Was that a tough transition?
A little bit. You know, the first time I ever had to deal with times was when I was my little stint in TNA. And I couldn't wrap my head around it, you know. I couldn't wrap my head around, okay, go out there and do everything in 4 minutes, you know. But now I've taken to it like it's like I'm an artist, and it's just a different media, you know. It's,
right.
It's sculpting, and I normally paint, you know, and you know, I normally do oil, and they're making me paint with acrylics, you know. And it's just like, to me, it's just another part that I intend to master and, you know, to get better at as time goes on. So that way, I have experience in doing it, and I can pretty much do anything, you know, if I need to.
Right. Now, when you first debuted in the WWE, it seemed like they were kind of going to give you more of an MMA type of gimmick, but that seemed to disappear quickly. Could you give us some insight onto what happened there?
Well, I'm a big MMA fan,
right.
You know, and Paul Heyman was the one who got me my start there at ECW. He was a big MMA fan, and I was doing a lot of stuff down there in the developmental territory, OVW. And it just seemed to work. But a lot of it's really hard to kind of, you know, do with guys you've never worked before, you know, and I'm more of a pro wrestler anyway, you know. As a hobby, I do jiu-jitsu and all that other stuff that, you know, they tell you about on TV. It's all true, but it's a lot of it isn't pro wrestling. You know, if it was, I'd be in the UFC or something like that, getting
sure.
my ass kicked every night. But, you know, a lot of it just isn't pro wrestling, so it's hard to translate it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's still part of the character. I know Joey Styles will hammer that, you know, that point home every time I'm on I'm on TV. But I just here and there, it's good to bust something out every once in a while. But I think a lot of the fans, not that they're dumb, I just think it's kind of over their heads.
Right. Can we talk a little bit, too, about the straight-edge lifestyle? Because I think, unfortunately, a lot of people see that as your gimmick and don't realize that that is kind of the way you live your life.
Well, everybody who's listening to this, the tattoo on my stomach says straight-edge. That's just a little... basically, it just means I don't drink, I don't smoke, and I don't have promiscuous sex. And yes, I am a nerd, and I'm very proud of it, and I don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks. You know, it's just... Straight Edge was just something that was started in the early 80s by a guy named Ian McKay
yep.
and his band Minor Threat.
Yeah, I'm an old school punk rocker. I'm very familiar
Are
with
you?
Minor Threat, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, then you got to spread the word, you know, and it's just, then you know all about it. But for everybody out there who doesn't, you know, it was just the way, he didn't mean for it to turn into a subculture. He didn't even, I don't even think Ian McKay really sticks to those rules, you know, now. But it was just something that, you know, he saw kids coming to shows and just getting messed up and
mm-hmm.
you know, going not for the bands, but you know, to
get wasted,
to get screwed up, to get
yeah.
drunk, to get wasted. And it wasn't about that for him, you know. It was about the music, it was about the scene. And you know, he wrote a song called Straight Edge, and he wrote it all about that, and it just blossomed
wow.
into this gigantic youth
yeah.
movement, you know. And as a kid, me being a, you know, an old school punk rocker as well, like, I just, that was me. Like, you know, I read about that, and I didn't say, hey, that's something I'd really like to be into, or that's something I would like to do. I read it, and I took it like, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I was like, this guy stole this from me. Like, what the hell?
Now, in the world of pro wrestling, which we all know, lots of issues, lots of partying. Obviously, because of the physicality, painkillers are unnatural. Do you find it tough living the straight-edge lifestyle in pro wrestling?
No, not at all. I mean, in 2002, I fractured my skull, and I was in a lot of pain. I pretty much slept like 20 to 22 hours a day for 2 or 3 weeks. I refused all pain medication. They tried to give me like a big old bottle of, I don't know what the hell it was, but I told them I didn't want it.
Right.
So not only did I not want to pay for it, because it was really expensive and I didn't have insurance,
for
but
sure.
I wasn't going to take it anyway, you know, and they just didn't understand. They were like, no, you have to take this. And I was like, well, is the pain going to kill me? They said, no. I said, well, then I don't need to take it, you know, and I'll eventually heal and I'll eventually get over it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Can I also ask, too, while we're at it, a lot of people wonder about the Pepsi-Cola tattoo, obviously. Again, another really neat part of your character. Just tell us why Pepsi and not Coke or 7-Up.
Well, the aforementioned band Minor Threat had a guitarist named Brian Baker. He's moved on. He's in Bad Religion now. He's,
right.
You know, he's like an old guy now. Brian Baker has a Coca-Cola tattoo, and I remember being in detention in, like, high school, I think my freshman year, reading an old Maximum Rock and Roll interview with Minor Threat, and the interviewer asked Brian, why do you have a Coca-Cola tattoo? And Brian responded, I like Coca-Cola. And to me, as a kid, that just said the almost one-word answer and just the bluntness of, I like Coca-Cola, so I got a Coca-Cola tattoo. And the fact that he was straight edge, he didn't drink, he, you know, embraced this this corporate product, you know, that didn't sell alcohol and all that. I just thought there was something really to that. So a lot of the times when people ask me about that, I just tell them I like Pepsi.
Right,
but
right.
It has everything to do with me being straight edge and, you know, not drinking and, you know, just being a fan of Brian Baker and Meyer Fred.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about ECW, too, because that's where you've spent most of your time since you came in. Do you think the ECW, I mean, kind of right out of the gate, this new revamped version would have had trouble? Because I just can't see how the stigma of the past, what ECW was originally, is going to affect what people think of it today. Has that been kind of a battle for the ECW brand?
Well, of course. You know, I mean, we're all in a position to try to make new fans. And ECW is a lot different now than it was back then. So you're trying to get these new fans and create this new show and this new identity out pissing off the old fans, you know?
I right.
mean, it's like when, you know, sports teams, you know, get rid of their star players and overhaul the team. And, you know, they use nothing but rookies and stuff like that. And, you know, the people cry out and they're pissed at management and they don't want to support the team and stuff like that, but, you know, it takes a couple of years of rebuilding, and, you know, eventually everybody comes around. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's difficult to, but once again, it's a challenge, so,
yeah.
You know, I'm up for the task.
Right. Now, in the, they've been teasing the feud with the New Breed and the Originals. You've been babyface most of the time since you've been in. You worked great as a heel in the past. I'm just curious as how this plays out. You yourself, do you have a preference to heel, babyface? Which do you like?
I think it's pretty clear that I would rather be the bad guy. I would always rather be the evil little, you know, the evil little prick, and I think I excel at that. But I was told a long time ago to be a great heel, to be truly hated, you first need to be truly loved.
It's
you
true.
You need to master being the babyface, you know, and you never know when you least expect it. You know, when those fans embrace me the most could be when I, you know, stab them in the back. You never know.
It certainly could happen. I mean, have you been surprised by your reaction in the WWE? Because I, you know, as soon as you started appearing on ECW, there seemed to be a strong fan base there already for you.
Yes, I'm actually, I'm still a lot of the times overwhelmed by it. You go to places I've never wrestled before, you know, and for 12 minutes straight, the crowd's chanting CM Punk. And I think for them, if you're like, you know, it's a lot harder to get the people to like you than it is to hate you, so I think that's something I'm very proud of, especially for the fact that I was on TV 4 weeks before I debuted saying, hey, guys, I don't drink and I don't smoke. You know, and I think wrestling fans would tend to boo that. But surprisingly enough, you know, I haven't been booed, but I just think it's because what you see is what you get. You know, I'm not a clown. I'm not a garbage man. I'm not an astronaut. I'm CM Punk.
Right.
You know, like what they see is real, and I think they make that connection, and that's been my saving grace. They let me be me.
Now, this year, as we mentioned off the top at WrestleMania in a couple of weeks, you're going to be part of the Money in the Bank match along with several other impressive competitors. First off, you've got to be happy to be in that match, just plain and simple, even if you don't come out on top.
God, I can't believe it's 2 weeks away. I'm happy, but of course I'm obviously, you know, going to do what I can to make sure I come out on top. But yes, I'm very pleased right now. Very pleased.
Have now that the eight of you have been determined, have you guys had any chance to sit down and kind of work out what you want to do, or do you think that'll even happen, or you'll just the eight of you will just go out there and go crazy?
I really don't know. I know I got some ideas. I think. If you're a fan of my Ring of Honor stuff, you know I can get a little bit creative.
Yes.
When the plunder comes out, and I don't know, I can honestly just tell you that I'm going to kill somebody, or I'm probably going to be killed.
Do you worry about it being too crazy with eight guys in there? Because I mean, last two years it was only six guys.
I worry about the volume of traffic, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't worry about being too crazy. I mean, this is my first WrestleMania. I intend to, you know, whatever they throw at me, I intend to work with and, you know, I make it the best it can be. You know, I intend for people to remember this as my first WrestleMania, and I intend for a lot of people to be blown away by it.
Right, right. Well, it's got potential to be a great match. I mean, you've got the Hardys in there who work the great ladder matches. You've got Finley in there who's just a solid worker. You've got yourself. Kennedy, Orton. It actually has potential to be maybe even the show stealer.
It very well could be, and I think a lot of the, you know, I know Kennedy's thinking this way. You know, me and him are two very young guys
right. Going
into our first WrestleMania, and we intend to pull out all the stops. And you know, I think me and him, injuries, you know, without injuries, should have pretty healthy careers in the WWE. And you know, I can't wait to hook it up with him in there.
I agree. I mean, I think of all the guys that are in the match, CM, I think you and Kennedy have the most to gain from this match more than any of the others.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know what? There's victory even if you lose. You know, you can always be that guy that just steals that show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, hey, it happened 20 years ago with Savage and Steamboat, right?
Precisely.
There you go.
So you know, it's funny. That's my whole mentality going into this. I've been watching Savage Steamboat and Hogan Andre about once a week.
That's hilarious. Well, that's you're certainly setting the bar high, but you're setting it at a good spot. I just got one more quick question before we wrap. I know your little bit of time in TNA, you had a bit of a run-in with Teddy Hart, and we just keep hearing these crazy stories about Teddy Hart, and I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on him and whether, you know, he can take that name and talent and do anything, or is he just going to, you know, stab himself in the back?
Yeah, it's all up to Teddy. You know, Teddy's a character. I've since buried the hatchet with Teddy. You know, I saw him at an indie show in Jersey, I think, and he walked in and scurried away to his corner of the locker room, and I just followed him, and I was like, yeah, dude, you know, whatever. You do your thing, I'll do mine, but, you know, we don't got to, you know, keep up the BS and all that. And he was shocked, and, you know, I think he maybe invited me to his palatial estate on the moon and told me he was going to, you know, get me cats that would cook me, you know, three-course meals, and I don't know. Oh. Teddy's Teddy, you know, he's insane, but...
It seems a shame, though, that a guy that seems to have so much talent, he's already got the branding from the most famous wrestling name, probably, you know, one of the most famous wrestling families ever, he just seems to want to throw it all away.
Maybe he's just a kid. I mean, I really don't know Teddy personally
right. All
that well, so I can't really say, you know. But, yeah, I mean, he's out there, and to a point, it's entertaining, and then to another point, it's just like, okay, you're being retarded. You need to stop,
yeah. You
know. And you never know. I mean, half of his crew works here now. You got Davey Boy's kid. You got
right.
CJ Smith, Natty Neidhart. There's always rumors of a new Hart Foundation and stuff like that. So, I mean, you really never know, but... I know he's burned a lot of bridges, not
yeah. Only
just in wrestling, but he's burned them here. You
wow.
know, way far back as 1997.
Wow.
You know, so I just, you know, time's going to have to tell with him.
Mm-hmm. CM, I want to thank you so much for joining us early on a Monday morning like this for the interview, but I really appreciate you. I wish you nothing but success in the WWE. They need to create some new stars, and guys like yourself and Kennedy are definitely the wave of the future.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and thank you for all the kind words. I appreciate it.
And that was CM Punk, and thank you to him for joining us on that particular edition of The Law from 2007. So we then had highlights of, and I quote, the largest movie premiere of the century.
Yep.
The Condemned.
Yep.
Largest movie premiere of the century.
Mm-hmm.
It took place over WrestleMania weekend, and we got a completely unbiased review from various fans and coworkers of Steve Austin's in the WWE, stating it's flat awesome, and all of the talent endorsing the movie, including Steve Austin in an Affliction shirt, praising the movie, which unfortunately would be an utter bomb at the box office, and to my recollection, the biggest money loser of any WWE Studios project at this point. So it did have that going for it. Todd Grisham is backstage with Mr. Kennedy. Kennedy congratulates himself, and he tells the champions to grow eyes in the back of your frickin' head, and that nice guys finish last. He isn't a nice guy, and he holds up the briefcase for this dramatic still, and the briefcase flops over and hits Grisham in the hand as they're waiting, because he holds up the briefcase like defiantly, and then it just flops down. It's very funny if you watch it. And then they showed an all grown up spot with Batista, who was certainly looked all grown up from before to after.
Yep.
And then we had, these are the two guys I wanted the All Grown Up ads for. The Great Khali and Kane. You imagine those spots? Those would have been the highlights of the campaign.
Well, you'd have Kane, I guess.
You could have had so much fun with it, too. Like, he's out in the woods in a cabin somewhere. Yeah,
in the funeral home.
I'm all grown up. This was an inter-promotional match. I had no clue going into this. Khali representing Raw and Kane on SmackDown. Not exactly Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels. Kane gets sent to the floor and then re-enters and takes a clothesline. There's a body slam by Khali and then stomps in the corner. This is where Jim Ross gets his bowling shoe ugly offense comment in. Kane comes back, hits a clothesline off the top, and Khali will not go down. And then his arms eventually get tied up in the ropes, a la Andre. And then Kane grabs his hook from under the ring, and Khali stops him. Kane yanks the chain, crotches Khali, and body slams Khali. And they note shades of WrestleMania 3.
Mm-hmm.
And notes that this is the first time Khali has been slammed.
Yeah.
There's a torn turnbuckle pad, and then each grabs the other by the throat. Khali breaks free, hits the tree slam, and just stands on top of Kane with one foot for the pinfall at 5 minutes and 32 seconds, and then Khali chokes Kane with the hook afterwards. So Khali going over very strong in this inter-promotional match.
Yeah, this was actually a very brief match, and, you know, considering my very low expectations for it, I thought it was quite passable, and we got to see Kane here basically be the workhorse of the match, and, you know, he doesn't always get to wrestle as an underdog, but I thought he did a good job of that here, wrestling, carrying basically this very immobile giant in the Great Khali, and they had to work that stupid chain and hook in. And I thought they managed to find a way to do it in a pretty safe and tame way. But it was very clear here that the Great Khali just sucked. Like, his offense sucked. That tree slam sucked.
This was at his most mobile as well.
Yeah, and it was awful. But I think Kane and the producers of the match managed to make the best of this situation.
We should also go over original plans they had for WrestleMania. As you heard the comment there, the shades of WrestleMania 3. That was very much a visual they wanted to recreate, mm-hmm. playing off of Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And Hulk Hogan was very much figured into this year's WrestleMania. At first, they were discussing him versus the Great Khali for that very visual. Then plans had adjusted, and they were going to have Hulk Hogan against Shane McMahon on the show with Great Khali in the corner. They wanted to get that body slam spot with Hulk Hogan, obviously. So Hulk Hogan, what broke down at this point, and boy, does this tie into current events of a quote-unquote friend of his messing up his opportunity. Hulk Hogan was on the Bubba the Love Sponge show, and it was Ann Russo, who was the secretary at the time for John Laurinaitis, called Hulk Hogan, and I believe this actually took place on the air, where Hulk Hogan was being asked about different people they wanted to induct into the Hall of Fame.
So you mentioned Ann Russo.
Ann Russo, no relation to Vince Russo, but a longtime employee in the WWE, mm-hmm. and she reported directly to John Laurinaitis at the time, who was the head of talent relations. So Ann Russo calls Hogan, and Hogan either like he put this on speakerphone, or he just relayed all of the information on the air about the candidates that the WWE was considering. And the WWE wants all this stuff to be very close-lipped. They do not want this information out there. And that was it. Hulk Hogan was persona non grata that year for WrestleMania. They were not going to use him, and therefore he did not do WrestleMania, and they changed things around. So you had plans change with Triple H's injury. Hulk Hogan was excommunicated that year, and that is essentially how a lot of different plans changed. But Hogan was very much being discussed to be a big part of this WrestleMania and get that. I would have loved to have seen a Hulk Hogan Great Khali match.
Do you think he could have slammed Great Khali at this point?
Yeah, they would have worked. I mean, they pulled out. I would be more concerned with Khali just being able to get up for it, but he did. He did here. So for Kane,
yeah.
So they got the visual, but I don't know if it's one that will necessarily be one of those replayed moments. Then we had the All Grown Up Divas ad, and then Crime Time is consoling Eugene, who's had a rough go of things. Name calling at the hands of Vince McMahon, a head shaving, a lumberjack on the first time ever lumberjack tag match exclusive. And he's reeling from all of this, and Crime Time is just trying to cheer him up. So they introduce him to the Extreme Exposé dancers, Brooke Tessmacher, Kelly Kelly, and Layla.
Her name wasn't Brooke Tessmacher.
She was just Brooke, I think, at this point. What was her name in ECW?
I have no clue.
Okay. I don't know.
Let me look it up.
There's a record scratch that comes out of nowhere, and Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young appear in the same dance outfits as the Extreme Exposé. And then the long-forgotten Slick wanders in. This was his first appearance in years. Mm. This man was just... You couldn't get a hold of this guy. I tried to book this guy so many times for an interview, because every time I ask Mouth, someone we want to get, he always has wanted to interview Slick. So he appeared here. He does some rhymes, does a dance, and then Dusty Rhodes enters. He wants to dance. And then we got cameos from Sergeant Slaughter, Jimmy Hart, IRS, Jerry Briscoe, Mean Gene Okerlund, Pat Patterson, Howard Finkel, and in full dragon attire, Ricky Steamboat. And it ends with Farouk wandering in and yelling, "Damn," as this ended. This was our cavalcade of wacky characters moment backstage.
Yes, why not?
This was worth it for Slick.
Yeah, I think, you know, they do kind of a yearly nostalgia segment for their legends to make cameos in. And I mean, dancing is just sort of like an easy way to create a light, funny mood. I thought this achieved its purpose. I believe her name was Brooke.
It was Brooke. Then we had Chris Benoit against MVP for the United States title. MVP got a fairly elaborate entrance here. They had cheerleaders come out, big pyro entrance for him. You can usually judge based on the creativity and dedication to a different kind of entrance, the guys that they clearly have pegged to be something coming out of the show. And MVP was one of them. Chris Benoit came out, and they cut to a sign: Chris Benoit, WWE's true MVP.
That's all he got for his entrance.
Yes, a cutaway to a sign. There were tons of counters and reversals by MVP early with the story that he was out-wrestling Chris Benoit, including a sharpshooter attempt and a crossface, which MVP was able to get a rope break through. Benoit started bleeding from the mouth, and I thought Michael Cole and JBL really shined during this match and getting the story of the match across of what MVP was doing. And this is so important because there are matches that things happen that just are not acknowledged and therefore they don't happen.
Yep.
A few weeks ago, you pointed it out, the Neville Hayabusa tribute spot that I will guarantee you 90% of the crowd had no earthly idea of. And that's where this match, if they didn't tell this story about, look at MVP and how he's out-wrestling the technician, this match would have just been nothing.
Absolutely.
And I thought they did a great job in this match.
Cole and JBL, I certainly thought they were at their best here. Both men taking it very seriously and selling the story in a very believable, convincing
MVP
way.
Got so much out of this match because of the commentary. MVP blocked a superplex and snapped Benoit's arm and therefore worked over the left arm. JBL stated that Benoit will be a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame someday. I have to make these I have to recap this.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
it's we're reviewing this today for a show that happened then. Benoit hit a series of German suplexes. MVP stopped a top rope headbutt and hit a superplex to Benoit. And on the collision on the mat, Benoit hooked the leg as he landed and got a two count. And then MVP ran Benoit's bad arm into the post. And Cole explains how the left arm being damaged is going to affect him applying the crossface. Mm-hmm. Who took over Michael Cole here? Michael Cole had a very good stretch with Taz and with JBL during different eras on SmackDown. And this was, I thought, Michael Cole's best call of the show, bar none.
Yep.
MVP then blocked the crossface. He hit the ballin' elbow, and then missed a mafia kick in the corner, and Benoit hit a series of Germans, and then the diving headbutt off the top with the story that his arm, he couldn't use the crossface, so he had to revert to the diving headbutt, and he won in 9 minutes and 20 seconds. I thought this match was awesome.
I thought it was very good.
Yeah. Okay, you weren't as high about it.
No, not as high, but I thought it was very
awesome
good.
Might be a stretch. I thought the commentary was tremendous. It added a lot.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this match for what it was. And I thought MVP got more out of the loss here than certainly a win would be something, but the feud was going to continue, and this was a great way to continue that feud.
Yeah, if the goal is to kind of like, you know, promote MVP as somebody who's your new star, who can showcase some good wrestling ability, I thought it more than achieved it. I suppose, you know, at this time, being a Benoit fan, I think at WrestleMania, I would want to see a match where he would be able to fully exercise his abilities. And I felt like in this match, he was just kind of like, you know, limiting himself to a level where MVP can keep up with him. And I didn't feel like I got Benoit at his best, which I kind of expect at WrestleMania.
I think they very much had Benoit pegged for a certain role. Mm-hmm. They were phasing him down in the main roster. This whole feud was to establish that MVP was better. They would later do on either the next pay-per-view or the May pay-per-view, a 2 out of 3 falls match for the title. And MVP won the match 2 straight falls. I mean, they were just trying to make MVP very strong here, and Benoit was going to get him there. And then the idea of moving Benoit to ECW to work with a lot of the younger guys. I mean, Benoit was very much being positioned for a Finley style of role, where he would have a presence, but he was not going to be a pushed guy. Mm. And you could argue at that time in his career, I mean, this guy was still an outstanding worker, but his role was to get other guys ready, and he did a very good job with MVP. There's a montage of the Undertaker highlights, which was his all-grown-up ad, so they didn't get too creative with this one. It was just pretty much a highlight pack of the Undertaker. Donald Trump is backstage on his phone, stating that there's almost 100,000 people there at Ford Field. They need to have this guy as their head of PR.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this guy was never shy about exaggerating anything. Mm-hmm. And he is alongside Miss USA Tara. Not Victoria, just Tara. And
legit Miss USA.
I guess.
Yeah.
Because Donald Trump was obviously involved with that. And Donald Trump, and not the fitness model, is stating that he is hungry. And there's no food around. And the boogeyman shows up, and Donald Trump just completely no-sells this guy. He just stares off like he's bored.
Where's Jim Cornette?
Jim Cornette would have slapped Donald Trump in the face. And tells the boogeyman to get him some food, which culminates in the line, "I'm coming to get you some sandwiches." And Donald Trump shakes his head and describes what type of place this is. This was WWE comedy at its worst.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure if this was actually scripted or ad-libbed, Trump's lines, I mean, because there's just no other explanation for how bad this was. He says, like, something like about a worm sandwich. It was really bad.
Of all the things, to me, it's like, it probably took some convincing on WWE's part for Donald Trump to do this. Why?
Yeah.
This was just, we've got him here. Let's use him for, this was just stupid. Yeah. They showed highlights from the Hall of Fame ceremony, including what a callback to our 96 look back, because we saw Mr. Perfect do the quote unquote Kevin Nash pencil thing in the video here. And William Shatner inducting Jerry Lawler, stating it is his honor to monkey flip you into the Hall of Fame. And there were appearances here by a young Joe Hennig, the future Curtis Axel, and Cody Rhodes.
Ah, that's right. Yeah.
So there you have it. Cody Rhodes was already in developmental at this time in Deep South. Joe Hennig, I don't believe he had been signed by this point. So Lillian Garcia then announces the WWE figure of 80,103 for Ford Field. And then Garcia hands it over to Howard Finkel to welcome the Hall of Fame class. Finkel was great here, introducing Jim Ross, Mr. Perfect, Jerry Lawler, Nick Bockwinkel, Mr. Fuji, who is joined by Don Morocco. The highlights often seek of the wild Samoans who, when the isolated shot was on them and they just made their crazy faces, great.
Yeah.
Joyce Farhat there on behalf of the Sheik, and then Dusty Rhodes, who all went in. This was also 2007, and all the rage amongst the kids were text message voting, which WWE had partnered up with AT&T for, and 82% of the text message voters believed that The Undertaker would beat Batista, and JBL said, I agree.
I don't think text message voting sounds that outdated today, 9 years later. But I'd like to see, you know, in 9 years' time, our reaction to watching current WrestleMania and seeing what a Twitter poll reaction might elicit.
Yeah, I just, even when this came out at the time, I could not fathom anyone paying something to have one of thousands of votes tabulated. Who would pay for that?
Let's ask the people who watch American Idol.
I know. It totally was, it worked. Yeah. But I didn't get the concept. But I also thought the iPad was going to be a giant disaster. I thought no one would want to carry around this fucking thing. So that's me on the technology front. You never know what's going to hit. Then they showed a video for the world title match with The Undertaker winning that year's Rumble, and he was given three options. He could challenge John Cena, Batista, or my pick, Undertaker going for the ECW championship held by Bobby Lashley. So, to their credit, they included Lashley in the decision process, but this was very much kind of like having the Republican candidate, the Democrat, and then the independent at the debate. Mm-hmm. Then we had this very dramatic music, a big stare down to close on between The Undertaker and Batista. And then
really well done video.
It was a very good video package. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Teddy Long was included as the ring announcer. I thought we were going to get an impromptu tag for WrestleMania.
I'm not sure why they had Teddy Long do him. I mean, I guess they wanted
They just had a presence for him on the show, but my God, if Howard Finkel can only be squeezed in for the Hall of Fame.
Wasn't Chimmel their guy on SmackDown?
They had Chimmel and Garcia as the two ring announcers. And my God, Howard Finkel, I mean, it's a broken record. I think everyone agrees what a great announcer this guy was, and all he could get was the Hall of Fame introductions. He got his 1 minute of WrestleMania time. And
But I definitely feel like to have The Undertaker, which is, you know, arguably the best entrance of all time in pro wrestling, come out, all dramatic, druids, everything, and then to hear Teddy Long's voice make the announcement,
Not good.
Took away from it.
Batista and The Undertaker, a match that was heavily debated going in which title match would go on last, and Cena and Michaels won out, and Batista and The Undertaker did not. And I think we can look back on in hindsight, and if I were to tell you these two had a very good match at WrestleMania, you would totally believe that. Mm-hmm. Going into this match, I can say expectations were not high. Batista did not exactly have a track record of excellent matches, and The Undertaker, it was select opponents. This guy had not had his great WrestleMania run. This, to me, was the start of it. Mm. I mean, he had a good match with Randy Orton 2 years prior, but he was coming off the casket match with Mark Henry. And, I mean, this, to me, was the start of The Undertaker's... The streak, to me, was the excellent matches he had at WrestleMania, starting with this one.
Right.
Because this one overachieved at the time in 07. Very elaborate entrance with all the druids for The Undertaker. This was also when they had given him the moniker, the best pure striker. Him and Chuck Liddell, they were neck and neck at this time in 07.
They don't really use that anymore.
No.
I wonder why.
Batista using a takedown to start. That's how you eliminate the striking.
That's right.
Took him down with a double leg. Tons of boos. And he clotheslined him to the floor, and Taker got sent into the steps as Batista had the heat early. Batista hit this flying shoulder block off the top, and then Taker fights back, hits the snake eyes and a running boot, hits the old school, and then Batista blocks a choke slam, continues his attack, and hits a leg drop, the Undertaker does, on the edge of the apron. Taker was working extremely hard in this one.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't really tell any type of physical limitation with the guy at this point.
That leg drop, I mean, there is no surprise this guy has hip issues. I mean, doing that spot, even if it's only once or twice a year, which he was still working fairly regularly in 2007. This was not his once-a-year schedule. Taker then hit a tope over the top to Batista on the floor, a much cleaner landing than the Shawn Michaels one in 2009.
It looked great. It looked perfect.
Holy Christ. I mean, how this guy pulls this off, even at this time in 2007, was rather remarkable.
Once a year.
What was also, if you watch this tope, I mean, he runs off the ropes, but it looks, if you watch, like, slowly, it's like he plants his feet and then jumps. He actually makes it harder for himself because it's almost like he stops his momentum to plant his feet and then, like just jump off.
Have you tope'd, John?
I'm just saying, Wei, if you were, like, watch a high jumper as they go. You want to spring to help you get over. I'm more impressed that he does it this way.
Stop short, you're saying.
Yeah, it's like he goes, and I'm sure a lot of that is probably his knees are a goddamn mess.
Okay.
So he would run, plant, and he still got the height over.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never done one of these. So I can't really say. I trust the guy, though, the fact that, you know.
I don't care how he gets over. He did it, and it looked great. But I'm saying I think it's even more impressive if you watch the way he does this here, that it's like he cuts off his momentum before he even gets over. Batista then sent him into the timekeeper's table with a reverse Irish whip. And then they fight onto the announce desk, and Batista hits a running power slam. And of all tables, imagine that. It was the ECW announce table that gets destroyed prior to the one match that they have to call. Lots of boos. Taker then stops a Batista bomb attempt in the ring, and Batista hits a belly-to-belly. Cole is convinced that the streak is going to end via a belly-to-belly suplex, but no. The Undertaker kicked out. There's punches in the corner. Taker hit a last ride for a near fall. Then Batista catches him with a spine buster, shakes the ropes, and Taker sits up, catches him with a choke slam. Batista kicks out. Then Batista gets away from a tombstone attempt, spears him, Batista bomb, Taker kicks out, then goes for another, but Taker blocks with a back body drop, and Taker sends Batista into the corner and hits him with a tombstone and pins Batista at 15:47. They peaked this match very well. The crowd was into it, and this was a very good match.
It was
way above what I think anyone anticipated these two pulling off at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure by the standards of both men at the time, this was exceptional. And when you place it on the stage of a WrestleMania in front of a crowd this large, I think it makes it that much more significant, that much more enjoyable.
And it was The Undertaker's first world title, WWE title or world title, since 97. So it'd been that's not true.
2002. He won the Undisputed.
That's right. 2002. I'm overlooking both the 99 and 2002 runs he had. But the first time he won the world title version on SmackDown. So he walks to the back with the smoke, and he's holding the title, and then turns back before exiting, a cool visual to go off with. And this was, of course, the famous story where Batista, who was not exactly happy at their placement, came backstage and yelled, "Follow that!" The always endearing Big Dave Batista. And we went to a Bobby Lashley all grown up spot. And this featured, you know, Lashley would come out and did the clean, like, jump from the floor to the ring that Brock Lesnar does. And they showed the kid going for the jump, but then they cut to Lashley. I can't imagine this kid made that jump.
No, of course not.
So he probably just killed himself trying to land this. Vince McMahon is backstage, and Stephanie walks in with her child in a carriage, and Vince throws a tantrum and starts making baby sounds, and then we cut to a camera from the point of view of the baby, and Vince McMahon doing baby sounds, describing what he will do to Donald Trump, and that he will give him a skull fracture. The climax of this particular segment was a bad smell, and Vince saying that the baby just took a Trump.
Listen.
So they found a segment that was worse than the Donald Trump boogeyman segment.
This was enjoyable.
Really?
I thought, yes. in the only way a bad campy wrestling sketch can be. I mean, you had Vince McMahon cut a promo about Donald Trump as if he was talking to his baby granddaughter. I thought it was hilarious.
Well, that is one on my unofficial survey. From there, we went to Rob Van Dam, the Sandman, Tommy Dreamer, and Sabu, the old guard of ECW, taking on the new breed, Elijah Burke, Marcus Corvon, Kevin Thorne. That was his name on ECW, right? Kevin Thorne, the vampire, and Matt Stryker, and they were accompanied by Ariel, Shelly Martinez. The ECW originals came through the crowd. Sabu looked so pissed, coming through the crowd and fans grabbing at him. It was great. Sabu jumped off the middle rope and missed Stryker with a clothesline by a mile, then draped Stryker on the top, which Sandman hit a leg drop from the top turnbuckle. The new breed then got the heat on Tommy Dreamer. Elijah hit the Elijah Express, which were the double knees into the corner. Lots of tags amongst the new breed. And then Dreamer hit an inverted DDT neckbreaker combo to Burke and Corvon. Tagging in Van Dam, he hit Stryker with a number of kicks, thrust kick off the top to Thorne, and then this big monkey flip that Stryker flipped over for. Rolling Thunder, and then Corvon pulls Van Dam to the floor. There's a dive by Sabu to Corvon. Dreamer hits a DDT to Stryker. Sandman then clotheslines Burke to the floor, and it ends with RVD hitting the frog splash to Stryker while everyone else is on the floor. Van Dam pins Stryker. 6:27, Styles gets in an oh my god, and this was a match where eight guys really wanted to get all their stuff in a very quick amount of time. And it was one of the weaker matches on the show.
Yeah. None of the guys felt very important here when you kind of toss them all into a match like this. It really felt like a prelim match that just, you know, wasn't at all significant.
Yeah. This was, I guess, to be quite honest, I mean, I guess they wanted an ECW presence on the show, but you realistically, that's what Lashley was at the time, and that's what Punk was. And Lashley, you could tell, was not going to be long for the ECW brand. At the rate they were pushing him. Yep. So that was this. It really felt like a intermission match.
Yeah, it was really weird, especially, I mean, I think one of the things you could point out to being the problem with that whole this whole thing was that the fact that all these original ECW guys just seemed to have all their personality ripped right out of them. You know what I mean? None of them got their real entrance. I'm assuming they didn't pay for Enter the Sandman for this. And it was weird to see the Sandman kind of play this generic baby face standing on the apron, clapping and trying to get the audience to clap. It's just not the Sandman.
And what a turnaround for Rob Van Dam. I mean, the peak of his WWE career being that prior June when he wins. He's the ECW and WWE champion. And then, of course, with the suspension that him and Sabu received. And here they were. Van Dam was on top of the world. And WrestleMania was going to be in Detroit the next year.
Yeah.
And he was just, I mean, he was the guy that got the pinfall. But, I mean, he had certainly fallen from grace from the prior summer. And his contract was coming due and he would leave later that year. So there was also that going for him. Steve Austin, all grown up ad with the young Steve Austin downing some milk. I guess our unofficial shout out to TNA's Kurt Angle. And then an ad for WrestleMania 24 that would take place in Orlando the next year. They showed Thomas Hitman Hearns in the crowd. And then it was time for the Battle of the Billionaires. And the graphic here on the screen was great because it really showed you the focus of this because the front and center still shots were of Donald Trump, Vince McMahon, and Steve Austin. And then in the background, in video form, were Lashley and Umaga, which was kind of the pecking order of this match.
Mm-hmm.
So Lashley and Umaga, we get into the video preview here, which was voiced by Jonathan Coachman, and they tried to do it like a piece you would see on Extra, and they dubbed it Excess.
Excess was their show. The show on Spike.
Yeah, I think that had ended by this point. I think they just called it this for this particular video. And they had various celebrities were asked for their prediction. And then Lillian Garcia goes to do the introduction as this campy barber music plays. And think about this, the fact that The ECW guys couldn't get their entrances, but the physical barbershop chair got its entrance. It fucking was on like a motor and came down the aisle.
I think it was being dragged, but yeah, it had its own entrance. And again, it tells you what the selling point of this whole show was.
It was. Yeah. I mean, this was certainly the main event of the show.
Yep.
Trump comes out with Tara, and there's other Miss USA women shown in the crowd. And bills are coming from the rafters, and Lawler notes that he is the most searched name on the web.
No.
Who knows? Maybe it was. And that takes us to Umaga, accompanied by Armando Estrada against Bobby Lashley. Lashley's theme music, it was closer to the music you would get on like the menu screen of the latest WWE video game.
Mm.
It was a very, very generic production tune he had for a guy that was getting pushed extremely hard at this point. Lawler notes that Trump is so rich, he's got a Persian rug made out of real Persians. Damn. And Ross counters by saying, "This is as far from amateur wrestling as one can get," discussing Lashley's background, and notes that Umaga does not have an amateur wrestling background, in case that plays a factor into this match. This was ECW champion versus Intercontinental champion, but was hardly a factor. This was, no titles were on the line. We got a million entrances, and I was all ready for this match to start, and then Austin's music hit. I'd totally forgotten about this guy by the time all the entrances were through. He got his own entrance, and this was a rare occasion of Steve Austin not wearing tights, jean shorts, or jeans. He was wearing black pants with a referee shirt. And Austin, the match begins, and Austin physically yanks Lashley off of Umaga in the corner, and they exchange words. Then Lashley brings Armando in and hits a running power slam and gets sent over the top as he ducks and Umaga flies to the floor. And Umaga returns, and Lashley misses this dive and flies through the middle rope to the floor and just crashes.
Umaga took one that looked pretty bad prior to that, too.
Yes. Yeah. And we hear Donald Trump, they cut to him, and he says, "Come on, Bobby. Come on." It's Donald Trump, very invested here. Austin then pulls Umaga off by the hair. Umaga hits a Samoan drop, and then Vince gets on the apron and gets knocked off by Lashley, who then lays out Umaga. Austin is counting them. They're both down. He gets to 9, and then he just stops counting and says there are no countouts in this match. And then Shane McMahon appears to assist Vince on the floor. I didn't have any recollection of Shane McMahon being part of this match. So Shane distracts Austin, and then Austin takes the Samoan spike, two huge boos, and weigh the update on Shane McMahon's shoes. Did you get the brand?
Oh, no, I did not.
Oh, he had his Nikes here, but I didn't know what the exact make were.
They weren't, I mean, I don't think they were as fancy as probably what he's wearing today.
These looked like just, you know, he went to the local department store and bought these. These didn't look like they were custom or anything of note. So Shane comes in and attacks Lashley with punches, but he can't just punch him away. He had to back up to give the Shane O'Mac shuffle.
Of course.
For the 74,000 in attendance.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. At least this time, the guy backed up, did the shuffle, and got beat up as a result of it for taking his focus off of Lashley. But they got to do something about that prior to WrestleMania this year.
They got the advantage on Lashley, and it led to the Van Terminator spot with Shane coming off the top and hitting the Van Terminator into a trash can onto Lashley. And then Shane reveals underneath that he's wearing a referee shirt, and Jim Ross proclaims, "It's insider trading." Umaga goes for a splash off the top, but then Austin pulls Shane McMahon out, attacks Shane, and sends him into the steps. And Trump is very confused by all this. He says, "What's going on over here?" And Trump then attacks Vince McMahon. Ross yells that it's a hostile takeover as Donald Trump just hits Vince McMahon with a precise spear and starts drilling him in the side of the head. This clip will certainly get played over the next number of months going into the election.
You would think so, huh? I'm surprised he got as physical as he did in a match like this.
I get the feeling this guy was just game once he got there, and he was just – I think he got a kick out of this. He must have. And
hey,
so
he got a kick out of a later spot too.
Well, yes, barely. Vince then tries to sneak away. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So Trump takes down Vince, the big spot that they wanted to see Trump get physical. Austin then ducks another Samoan spike. He stuns Umaga, who's staggering. Lashley spears Umaga and pins him at 13:05. And as Austin goes to jump down, he hits the mat and kind of like gives a four count instead of a three. And Lashley gets the win here. And then Austin attacks Shane in the post-match. He stuns Shane, who does this goofy bounce into the ropes and then out to the floor. Vince is trying to sneak away as Lashley then chases him down, brings Vince back in. They strap him to the barber's chair. Austin stuns Vince. They shave his head. And then Austin's music plays. Vince freaks out as he looks into the mirror with the Adrian Adonis spot. And it's Austin, Trump, and Lashley drinking beers. And it leads to one of the worst stunners in history.
Awful.
Delivered by Steve Austin to Donald Trump. And Austin leaves the big hero as Lashley tends to the fallen Donald Trump.
Yeah.
This, to me, would have worked if, first of all, the stunner was awful. It was just awful to Trump.
That's the clip they'll use in a smear campaign.
That is probably
how poorly Donald Trump takes the stunner.
But to me, this also, the end of this, it was like everything was on Austin.
Yeah.
And it's like Lashley looked like the goofball who's tending to Donald Trump. To me, it's like at least if Austin and Lashley had attacked Trump, that would have had some kind of thinking to it. Because you can argue that they wanted to have Lashley and Umaga involved here to get something for those guys. But the actual execution of this was Lashley was like number five here of the guys in the priority list.
Yeah, you're certainly not left thinking about Bobby Lashley as this really cool, good guy. You're left thinking about Steve Austin and how great of a badass he is.
I mean, he gained something by being involved in this, but I thought very little. He didn't feel like this breakout star coming out of this.
You could argue, though, that maybe he didn't have the charisma to be able to close off a segment as well as Steve Austin could. Perhaps that was the thinking.
He certainly lacked that presence amongst these other individuals, that charisma to really command that kind of a stage.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think you could have at least tried more with him. Like,
definitely.
He felt like an afterthought in this match.
I do agree. I do agree as that being sort of one of the weaker spots of this. But overall, I thought it was a very entertaining match that definitely delivered on entertainment value. I thought Vince was hilarious the entire time.
He was awesome.
His facial expressions as he's getting his head shaved are just great. Again, over the top, campy, and I think just fun.
In near tears.
Yeah. Trump, too. I think the guy is tailor-made for pro wrestling. The guy seems to play a cocky heel in everything he does up to this day. He's at the top of the cocky heel ladder in the world right now, playing, Republican candidate. So I think he was made for pro wrestling. And I was very surprised that he got as physical as he did, and I thought he was very entertaining as well.
And this is kind of the layout I expect for The Undertaker and Shane McMahon. Tons of bells and whistles, run-ins, and much like this, I think that they're going to book this with so much attached to it, and by the end of it, they'll pull off something similar.
And seeing how this, pretty much took sort of your semi-main slot towards the middle of the show, did you first of all think that was the right decision to put this not as the main event, but
I don't think this could have closed the show.
I agree. I don't think it could have either. And would you expect the same for Shane McMahon and The Undertaker?
That one's difficult because there is a big stipulation attached, and it's going to be tough to follow it with Hunter depending on what role he was. Something that was brought up that on Sunday by Agnew that I really hadn't considered was the fact that, okay, let's suppose here that Shane McMahon wins control of the company, and then Triple H is cheered in the main event. it's kind of this weird disconnect where Triple H should theoretically be out of power, and yet he's going to be a babyface in that main event slot. And do you kind of want to position the authority like you are ridding the company of the authority? I mean, those two matches are really fascinating on how it's booked and how the audience reacts to it, because there's a million scenarios.
And they've, you know, we've seen them distance themselves from that storyline between the two programs. And perhaps there's some thinking behind that, wanting to separate the two and not have Hunter comment on Shane McMahon for a similar reason.
But you're also counting on the audience to love Shane because he's out to get rid of the authority when this audience will probably be very pro-Hunter.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested from that aspect of things. Mm-hmm. But this particular year, I think comparing the two, I think they had the right thinking here with Lashley and Umaga. However, I don't think the execution really bared that out in terms of trying to get Lashley to that next level, but they were going hard with Bobby Lashley coming out of WrestleMania.
How much do you think Umaga gained from this?
Minimal, but I thought that he was a guy that they believed could pull this off, and I thought Umaga was really good in this match.
Absolutely.
And we should also recap here, some ideas they had originally for this was the idea of doing Shawn Michaels and King Booker in this spot, where it would have been Shawn Michaels as Trump's representative and Booker representing Vince McMahon. And that changed all over the place. Shawn, of course, had to go fill the main event slot. Booker got moved into the Money in the Bank. And they were discussing stuff all over the place for this. I mean, Hogan's name, I think, was linked to this match as well. They went all over. And the thinking was, with Shawn and Booker, was, how is this? These guys are established. Are they going to get anything more out of this? So the thinking was sound here with Lashley and Umaga. But I think when it came to actually laying out the match, if I was watching this on this day in 2007, I would be convinced that Steve Austin was going to do another match, because he was positioned as the top babyface at the end of this whole thing. This thing was built around Austin by the time this match was over. But that would not be the case. Then we had a John Cena all grown up spot, and Cole and JBL recap the pre-show lumberjack match as a way to give them some time to clean the ring from all the debris and shaving cream. And then we had the Lumberjills come out. Trinity, Victoria, Crystal Marshall, Jillian Hall, Michelle McCool, Tori Wilson, Mickey James, Layla, Kelly Kelly, Maria, Candace, and Brooke. Each one identified by Tony Chimmel. So
he was there.
Tony Chimbo was there. Okay. He did announce on this show.
I think Teddy Long would have been more appropriate for this.
You are 1,000% correct. Melina and Ashley had the Lumberjill match for the women's title. They had to follow the last match, and Melina put pressure on the back of Ashley, lifted her off the mat with this modified bow and arrow. There was this awful monkey flip by Ashley, and then she went for her top rope elbow drop, which was called Starstruck.
Sure.
JBL says, there was a lot of name-calling in the build-up to this, including Ashley calling Melina easy. Remember, Ashley was the babyface. So this was the, again, 2007 psychology, that the heel is easy. Melina reverses a cradle and pins her at 3 minutes and 13 seconds. Short, I'm not going to say sweet, and then Ashley knocks Melina to the floor. Big diva brawl. Everyone paired off with another woman, and this was like watching musical chairs, and Mickey James had no seat left, and she just stood around and just looked around, and she had no one to pair off with, so she just stood around.
How sad.
And that was it. And the Divas had to square off with the heels and baby faces. Very short match. It was nothing.
It was a poor Divas match, you know, from a time where I don't think work rate was all that important.
They showed the Shawn Michaels all grown up spot. I was done with these spots by the end of the night. I think we saw like 100 of these on the show. AT&T poll time. 59% voting for John Cena that he would win. And then they teed up the preview, and they state that Shawn Michaels has not been champion in 9 years, not counting his world title run in 2002. And their video had some very dramatic music. some great shots. This told the story very well of the build-up to WrestleMania, where Shawn Michaels had said he would catch Cena with that super kick when he least expected it, and they teased it on TV, including this awesome spot where Cena had somebody up on his shoulders for the FU, and Michaels was going for the sweet chin music, and you thought he was going to hit Cena, but he hit the guy on his shoulders, and I can't remember who the guy was. Mm. It looked awesome.
Yeah.
Just a great tease, and then, of course, that culminated on the Raw where they did the five-knuckle shuffle team up, and then he just blasted Cena. So that looked great. And this was, much like the Taker-Batista video, really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Michaels comes out to the DX music, but in full HBK gear. I thought when he would come out with Hunter, and when they did this in 97, fine. But when it was just Shawn in 2007, there was a massive disconnect with this theme and Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, coming out to it.
For sure, for sure. It always felt like Shawn was maybe doing an idea somebody else wanted rather than something that he... Not to say he wanted to come out to Sexy Boy all the time, but...
That was, you know, just so just associated felt, with
yeah,
him, though.
It did feel more like him.
So he.
I wonder if Shawn had his own choice of music, what he would actually choose.
Yeah, but could you have imagined Michaels prevailing in this main event, winning the title, and yeah, that's the music that he's celebrating to?
I suppose at the time that's what – those are the T-shirts they were selling.
They were – certainly. They were in DX mode yeah, at this point in time. And the music ends, and there was loud boos because this signaled the entrance of Jonathan Cena. And we cut outside to a car, and it –
some type of charger, like a Dodge Charger, I believe.
Yes. They noted it was a Ford.
Oh, Ford? Okay, never
I think.
Mind. So, is he, oh, yeah, they're in
of
Ford
course,
field.
Yes. They couldn't afford not to plug them.
Yeah.
He, very elaborate shooting here, Wei. This was like right out of like a car commercial.
Oh, it was a Mustang.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
It sped around the corners into the building and then drove through glass. And then John Cena came out. And
from the driver's side.
From the driver's
the
side.
The idea was that
John Cena had just whipped through Detroit traffic into the arena and right through glass.
Yeah. John Cena, in addition to being a great wrestler, is also a stunt driver.
Shane McMahon was watching this thing. He went through a glass with a car. How about this for an interesting note? Both men came out without their tag titles.
Oh, okay.
What a statement on the state of those things. So, John Cena and Shawn Michaels for the WWE title to close out WrestleMania.
How did they drop the tag titles?
Actually. We'll probably talk about that next week.
Oh, right.
Cena won't shake his hand. Cena offers his hand and Michaels slaps him. And Michaels starts off by playing cocky heel, but the crowd loves it because they detest John Cena. Huge boos whenever Cena hit anything. There's an enziguri to Cena on the floor, and then Michaels hits an acai moonsault and lands on the announce desk, a way better landing than the next year with Flair, where he landed ribs first.
He landed knee first here.
Yeah, that's expendable. He's fine. And then Michaels worked over the left knee of John Cena, where he just chopped it and targeted the knee for a while, which required John Cena to do a lot of selling, but at least it weakened him. Michaels ran the knee into the corner. He ran in and then missed it. And then Michaels got busted open on the forehead, and Cena mounts him with strikes to a chorus of boos. The FU gets blocked, and Michaels goes for the super kick. Cena ducks, and he takes out Mike Chioda. Just Michaels and his ability to take out officials at WrestleMania with
yeah,
that move. I mean, horrible accuracy this
I
time
also,
of the year.
I also didn't realize we were going to review two Shawn Michaels WrestleMania main events in a row.
I didn't think about that for 1 second when yeah, we picked these two either. Michaels then counters the FU into the DDT. Both go down. They go to the floor. Michaels hits a pile driver onto the steps. And I'm assuming this was how Cena cut his head open, because it was immediately after that there was a nasty cut on top of his head.
On
so,
the back of his head, yeah. So
yeah, so...
Probably wasn't a blade job.
No. Jack Doan then runs down with the original ref out, and Cena kicks out. Then there's a kip up by Michaels, and he hits a top rope elbow, the Starstruck, And then he sets up for the sweet chin music, but gets cut off by a Cena clothesline. Cena goes for an FU into a sunset flip roll up for a two count. And then Cena catches Michaels off the ropes, hits the FU, but he's hurt himself. There's a delay, can only get a two count on Michaels. Michaels goes for a cross body off the top. Cena rolls through into an FU attempt, but Michaels lands on his feet. Cena ducks a super kick, goes for an STF, and Michaels counters with a cradle for a two count, which I thought was the best sequence of the match involving these two. Cena then does get the STFU, and Michaels gets a rope break. Jack Doan has to tackle Cena to get off of him, and he starts admonishing Cena. It leads to Cena then shoving Doan out of the way and right into a sweet chin music. Both are down. Michaels crawls onto him. Cena kicks out, and Ross yells that Cena will not die. And he calls this main event wonderful. Cena then gets the STFU right in the middle. He's torquing back. And Shawn Michaels, very much playing off of the finish with Kurt Angle. He's holding his hand up like he's thinking of tapping. And then all of a sudden he taps just out of nowhere. And submits to the STFU, clean in the middle, and much like the Benoit match, it was not maybe the primary finish for John Cena, and getting the STFU over pretty significantly here, and it was the same way he beat Hunter the prior year with the same STFU. So Cena wins the match. This thing went about 28 minutes, and Ross calls it an amazing main event, part of our life's journey. As Cena then raises the title with a big pyro display.
Part of our life's journey.
This match was part of our life's journey. Birth, graduation, meeting your significant other, Cena Michaels 07, death. And then Cena and Michaels are on the aisle, and Cena wants to shake his hand. And much like the start of the match, Michaels will not shake his hand. And he's so upset, he just walks off to the back. Cena comes back in, and the confetti is coming down. And John Cena stands tall as WrestleMania goes off the air. I thought this match was excellent. I really enjoyed it a lot.
It was really good. It was very, very good. Especially some of those near fall sequences I thought were just... Shawn is just really, really tremendous. Especially at WrestleMania.
Shawn Michaels, good.
Yeah. Which match did you think was better?
Between this and the world title match? Yeah. This one. I thought this was the match of the show. But there were a lot of good matches on this show, given, you know, there's WrestleManias that has their good and their bad, and there were some bad matches on this show, but when you consider this show had the two title matches, Umaga and Lashley, for what it was, you know, I think people were happy with what it was. I thought Benoit and MVP was kind of just, it flew under the radar, but was very good. Money in the Bank was a very good one.
Yep.
Like, this was a very good show, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
And it did incredible business. So this was a very successful WrestleMania. It went off with the default montage. And I will just say, they showed highlights cutting from WrestleMania 3 to 23 here. And then they went into the Saliva song. And it's like they're editing this on the fly incorporate the Michael Cena match, which just ended minutes ago, into this closing package. And it's edited very, very well.
Yeah. So they don't do this anymore, but they would do it every year.
Yeah. And they did this way back into the 90s. Yeah. You know, you'd go off the air, but this was kind of taking it a step further. I mean, the editing is, I mean, their whole production from the mid 90s to the mid 2000s had grown by leaps and bounds. So if you take anything away from this review away, Shawn Michaels and the WWE production they're pretty good. So that's our conclusion. I give this WrestleMania, I give this a 9 out of 10. Wow. I'm going to give it a big one.
That's really high.
Maybe
that might be one of the all times.
I thought this was not the best WrestleMania of all time. I don't even think it's top 3, but it's up there. I think if I would sit down and think about it, this would maybe be top 5. Probably.
Yep, I totally buy that. I personally give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, this was a very fun show to go back and watch from 2007. And next week on the show, we will discuss the Raw from the night after WrestleMania 23. So that 2-hour Raw to look forward to next week. But earlier in the show, we heard a bit from CM Punk discussing going into the Money in the Bank ladder match. And now we're going to hear from Dan Lavransky from that night in April of 2007. He attended WrestleMania at Ford Field and joined myself and Jason Agnew on the Law that night.
We got to get to our loudest caller of the night, I can guarantee. here he is laughing. He's normally in the big chair with me. Dan the Mouth Lavransky was there live tonight. Hey, Mouth, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jay. How are you?
Doing very well. We thought it came off very well on television tonight. How was Mania for you live at Ford Field?
I have to agree with you, Jay. I totally give it a thumbs-up kind of show. It was really good. Now, the seats that we had, we were way, way, way up in the high end of the Ford Field.
So way up there, eh?
In terms of judging the crowd's reactions, it's very hard because Ford Field is gigantic. I did not realize how big of a venue it was. So sometimes it was hard. The crowd was into Money in the Bank for the spots, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But really, to me, the first match they really got into was Batista and Taker.
Now, you know, we were yakking earlier off the air. You had an issue with Money in the Bank going first, didn't you?
I was very surprised because what they did, and I know they showed highlights, they did a tag first with Flair and Carlito,
yeah,
against Chavo and Shane Helms. And after that, they started setting up ladders. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? I was very surprised that match was first. Yes, I thought it was a weird match to start with.
Well, I think, Mouth, with the pacing of the show, I mean, you really had, with Money in the Bank, the hair match, and the two title matches, on an 8-match card, you kind of had to pace it out that way. And I can see their understanding for putting Money in the Bank first, but it created that dead slot, and luckily they put Kane and Khali there, which I'm sure you were glad you got to see live.
You know what? That the women's match and that match were kind of the low lights of the night. No one was interested in Kane and Khali at all.
Now, how did the whole McMahon thing go live? It sounded deafening on TV.
Oh yeah, it was nuts, man. After it finally went down and they put McMahon in the chair and they shaved his head, it was absolutely crazy. Yeah, no, the place exploded for that, and the place also exploded huge when Austin gave Trump the stunner.
I don't understand that. Do you get it?
You know what? I think, like John was saying earlier, it was just a way to keep Austin kind of strong, I guess. I figure because Austin, he's the ultimate anti-authority character, that he would do it to Trump as well. I guess that's what they were shooting for.
You know what? I did like the fact that you said what John said earlier, because you're actually driving home from Detroit right now.
Yes.
You're listening to us on CFRB over in the States.
Yes. It's dicey, it's choppy, but in certain spots, it's like perfect.
Wow.
Our beautiful voices are coming out in Detroit.
Wow, that is very cool.
Also, guys, I should let you know, a lot of the fans here at the show, big fans of The Law, big fans of the Fight Network. I got a lot of compliments, so we're doing something right, guys.
Cool. All right, I'll have those checks out in the mail tomorrow, then. Now, Mouth, you were also at the Hall of Fame last night. I'm sure that was probably your highlight of the weekend. Tell us about...
You know what, John? I was not at the Hall of Fame last night.
You were not at the Hall of Fame? What happened?
Well, this is a bit of a story, and I have to tell it on the air, because if I don't, Carl DeMarco will shoot me.
Okay.
What happened, basically, is I was able to get tickets from Carl DeMarco, who's the head of WWE Canada, for the Hall of Fame, and me, in my stupidity, somehow lost them.
You lost the tickets?
I lost my tickets. Somewhere between getting to the hotel, getting out of the car, and going into the hotel, I lost the tickets.
Mouth.
So I am publicly apologizing on the air, because I know everybody at WWE Canada listens to this show. Carl DeMarco, I'm totally apologizing to you. I'm an idiot.
We're never getting tickets again.
I'm speechless.
It. I'm sorry, guys. I screwed us probably for good.
Well, here's the deal. Mouth, John went last year. You go this year. I know my time is coming. And
you'll get to go, Jay.
Yeah, but
you'll
I'm not going to get tickets.
Jay gets Orlando next year.
Unfortunately, I saw the same thing you guys saw. I saw the one-hour special. Although,
right.
When they showed it on USA, the second time they showed it, they actually shortened Dusty's speech even more.
Oh. Well, Ross and Lawler really got heavily edited on TSN, down to about 2 minutes each. So
yeah.
It was...
Well, on the second replay on USA, Dusty got barely one sentence out. He didn't do any of the horseman stuff. He didn't do any of the, like, it was severely shortened. All the stuff about Ricky Steamboat was cut out.
Wow.
Dan, before we let you go here, the final match of the night, of course, at WrestleMania was Shawn Michaels versus John Cena. Coming out of this now, driving home, experiencing the whole event, do you think it was the right decision to put them on last, or would you say in retrospect that Taker should have been holding the belt up?
TJ, why are you bringing this up?
Well, no,
because I was going on about it for months on end.
Well, listen, we talked about it last week. I kind of thought this one was going to be the one at the end. But yeah. Having said that, you said that the crowd was really hot for that Taker match. So after seeing both of the reactions, what do you think?
You know, actually, I think they did do it right, Jay, with the way it went. People, like, outside the arena this afternoon, while people were filing in, there were four T-shirts that were most prominent. And one of them was DX, one of them was Austin, one of them was Cena, but more than anything else, Taker shirts.
Yeah,
everybody
wow.
had a friggin' Taker shirt on. And so I'm not surprised that they did what they did, and I thought they put it in the right spot. And it went over huge. Everyone was, there were signs that said, 14-1, we riot. So,
well, no one was getting behind Batista tonight.
Cena and Michaels as well, I thought it was very well done. I thought they had an excellent match. The drama was really high, and people were popping huge for those final sequences.
Hey, you know what? You're right. Even technically, Cena worked really hard tonight. And if it was Michaels that was guiding him through, they worked really well. They gelled well. There were some great spots. Wrestling-wise, that was the best match of the night as far as in-ring work.
Yeah. You know what? I'd have to agree with you. I thought it was really, really good. And my other big highlight was Benoit winning with the headbutt.
Yeah, I love that finish after they told the arm story.
Yes, I thought it was really, really well done. And I thought MVP, I mean, I know he's in there with Benoit, but I thought he really raised his game tonight.
Yep, I totally agree.
I think we're going to leave it on that. Dan the Meltzer Vransky giving a compliment to MVP. So there you go. Dan, we'll have you back here in the studio next week. Of course, you'll be in the big chair. Thanks for going down there and taking that hit for the team. And way to go with losing those tickets, big guy.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, Mark, feel just... like such a knob. Thanks very much, Jay.
Just don't lose your passport from here until the border, okay?
Yeah, all right.
Or your bank card.
Yeah, don't lose that either. All right, brother.
All right,
we'll talk to you
Alex.
Next week.
Okay, take care, guys.
So thank you to Dan Lavransky 9 years ago for joining us that night. I don't think I thanked him at the time, but a thank you to Mr. Lavransky.
Delayed nine years. And thank you to 9 years younger John Pollock.
Yes, and 9 years younger CM Punk, who
wow.
also joined us on The Law
amazing.
Going into WrestleMania
look
that
at,
year.
Look at where the both of you are right now. Who would have expected 9 years ago?
Yes.
MMA career, MMA report career.
Hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, this has been a pretty lengthy review, so we have to get to your feedback now. Where are you sticking around for
yes,
feedback?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so why don't you start things off?
Let's go to Ran from New Jersey, who says, this WrestleMania had two pretty solid world title matches. I thought they wasted some of their best guys by throwing them all into the ladder match. If they had split some of those guys off of this card, it could have been a lot better. The Trump-Vince match really didn't do much to elevate either Umaga or Lashley, as the card was pretty much just bored until Austin, Vince, and Trump started doing stuff. From a business standpoint, I believe this show did very well, topping 1 million buys due to Trump, but as a wrestling show, it was just okay. 6.5 Oompa Loompa Sean's out of 10.
All right, we continue on and we go down to Jamie from England. Kennedy's win is something completely wiped from history, at least my memory. It's a huge shame he got injured. Was he planned for a big push? Yes, he was. It was incredibly sad to see Benoit when less than 3 months later, tragedy would strike. Not sure if it was just hindsight, but there was something about his eyes which seemed haunted. Okay, I think we're reading into a lot here. This whole match, I found strange with the context, the horrible flying headbutt, and JBL saying Benoit was a future Hall of Famer especially. He truly was one of the best ever. Such a shame he went the way he did. That shattered his legacy with his actions. As for the rest, Batista and Taker was way better than I ever imagined it would be. Very good match. The whole McMahon-Trump event seemed very dead. Incredible how much of a charisma vacuum the abhorrent Donald Trump and Bobby Lashley were. Fantastic Shane O'Mac shuffle, though. Enjoyed the main event, too. Was very surprised to see the submission finish, but anything after that awful Ford entrance for Cena was an improvement. Overall, enjoyed it and only stopped once. Highlights being Money in the Bank and Taker and Batista, 7.5. Excellent. Matt Stryker sells out of 10.
We go to McWhalen, who says, WrestleMania 23 was one of the better renditions of the program. All four of the big matches delivered, with match of the night going to Taker and Batista. The Money in the Bank may be the best one ever. McMahon got beaten up and shaved bald by a potential future president, and Cena Shawn was a good main event, even though I feel their near 60-minute match on Raw in the UK later that year was better. Fun fact, only two wrestlers that were on WrestleMania 23 will be in this year's Mania, and they are Kane and The Undertaker. It's hard to believe in less than 3 months after this huge success, the WWE would be at their all-time low with the Benoit tragedy. Nevertheless, WrestleMania 23 is just barely a top 10 WrestleMania and gets a 7.5 out of 10.
We go to Alex from Plymouth. I absolutely love this show, and I regret not watching much in 2007. I never truly understood what made Cena versus Michaels such an important match. It's a shame how things turned out for Ken Anderson, as he literally reached the height of his WWE career before he made bad decisions later on in the year. If only JBL could be great on commentary like he was on this show, it would enhance the commentary. Before we get to, he has some questions here. Do you think that things turned out better with the Cena Shawn Michaels backup plan, because they were going to go with the rematch with Cena and Triple H? I've got to say, I think Michaels turned out to be a great backup plan.
I definitely think better. I mean, I remember Triple H and Cena from the year prior, and I wasn't that impressed by it. You know, I always welcome a fresher matchup, and Shawn Michaels is a better wrestler than Triple H.
He asks, do you know who was on the creative team at this point for each brand? Yes, we went over this, but you had Michael Hayes, Brian Gewirtz, who were still, you had, sorry, it was Michael Hayes on SmackDown at the time, Brian Gewirtz on Raw, ECW had David Lagana and Dusty Rhodes, our pal, Court Bauer was still on the SmackDown team at this particular time, and I'm sure there were more other, Ed Koski still there. But those are some of the key creative people. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. Why is it that WrestleMania is never legitimately ever sold out and always ends up getting papered? This one was pretty damn close to full. There were only like an extra, like they, it legitimately had, I believe it was 68,000 paid and 74 in the building. So it was pretty close. There's years that it fills up, and there's others where sometimes they do have to paper, which they did the following year in Orlando. And when do you guys think was the pinpoint moment that the ECW relaunch was destined to fail? I would say December to Dismember. Most had already seen the ECW ship sinking, and I think that event confirmed where things were going and Heyman's exit.
All right, we go to Peter from Toronto, who says, I remember watching this pay-per-view at a local bar with some buddies called Heroes. The world title match is definitely delivered in my eyes. Batista versus Taker was way better than I expected. And I remember the story about Taker, I believe, telling Michaels or Cena after their match. Oh, okay, that was Batista. John already outlined that. We go to Cena versus Batista delivered. But throughout the match, I wanted Michaels to badly win so we could get another Michaels WWE title run. It would have made the storylines going into the summer better with Michaels the champion facing challengers like Cena and Norton instead of everyone chasing Cena. But the Money in the Bank match was a spot fest. It was a waste of Edge at this point, especially being taken out during the ladder spot with Jeff. Honestly, with what happened in the end with Kennedy, Edge should have just won it again from the get-go. And it's too bad Lashley didn't pan out in the WWE, because this seemed to be the start of his mega push with the championship match in July against Cena. I wonder how many world titles he would have had if he was still with the company today, 9 years later.
Yeah, the thing with Edge, I mean, obviously in hindsight, I mean, he ended up getting the briefcase, and if things had worked themselves out and he had won this the following year, you would have been able to do that streak versus streak with Taker and Edge. But, you know, they had big plans for Kennedy, and who could possibly have predicted what was going to happen over the next number of months involving him? All right, we go to Sean from New Jersey. WrestleMania was overall a pretty solid show. The Money in the Bank ladder match was a great opener. Taker and Batista was surprisingly good. Cena and HBK was probably one of Cena's best WrestleMania matches, and the Battle of the Billionaires had some fun moments, kind of what I expect the Shane Taker match this year will be. Question, is there any truth to the rumor that Michaels was pissed at Cena during the match for not selling his left leg after working on it for a solid 5 to 7 minutes? That would explain the awkward interaction between the two men after the match was over. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but Michaels seemed visibly upset throughout the match, and I remember at the time reading the rumor. I had never heard that, so I can't say, and I thought the post-match was simply, you were trying to build to a rematch between these two, because on Raw, a number of weeks later, they do the big 55-56 minute match on TV. So I don't think that would have been an audible, for instance, of the handshake deal. I think that was completely the plan at the point. And I had never heard that with Michaels, so I have no idea.
Okay, we go to our next piece of feedback, which says, I thought a very enjoyable WrestleMania overall. Let me get the bad out of the way first. Kane and Kali was dreadful, as was the women's title match. They really weren't needed at all in the show, but I guess they acted as buffers. So they're good. I thought the Money in the Bank match was very good, allowing everyone to have some shine at spots in the match. Battle of the Billionaires got given a ton to be good, and it was. I forgot Benoit actually beat MVP. That finish seemed a little flat, but it was solid before that. Of course, the main reasons to watch the show were the two world title matches that were pretty outstanding, especially considering that Batista and Cena were not the greatest in-ring at this time, although I think both had their best year in 07. For me, though, this Mania was about the can't-miss prospects that totally missed. You look at Kennedy, MVP, Umaga, and Lashley, and they were all labeled as future stars and world champions at the time. Skip forward a year, and Kennedy was in the exact same match, joined by MVP. Umaga was totally forgotten with Batista, and Lashley wasn't even with the company.
We go to Patrick from Oxford. This was a good WrestleMania. It's always great when they start with the Money in the Bank ladder match. I was definitely a fan of Kennedy and felt he was destined to win the title. It's weird that Edge is in this match after his show stealer match at last year's Mania. Yeah, Edge and Orton were kind of just odd men out this year, and they got tossed into that match. Benoit, MVP, had a great match, but a terrible feud. Batista Taker was the show stealer, and were out to prove they should have been in the main event match. ECW match was complete crap. Lashley and Umaga was okay, but nothing special. It was only the storyline that sold this match for people. The women's match was more crap, but what do you expect for a 3-minute match? Melina, I always felt, was a good enough wrestler and had a great character. She just happened to be around during a bad time for women's wrestling. Shawn and Cena was fantastic. Really thought Shawn was going to win. I know everybody will say their Raw match was better, but I prefer this one. I give this pay-per-view 7 out of 10.
We got a mic from Minnetonka, who asks, two questions. One, Court mentioned previously that Ray was supposed to be in Lashley's spot. How would it be possible if Ray got hurt in October 06, yet he was still used in the angle to heat up Umaga and wouldn't be back until SummerSlam of that year?
Ray was, he definitely had an injury, and that's why he wasn't on this show, but I don't think it was October, as I recall. I think it was earlier than that, but I had never heard that story about Ray being involved in that match because I think they knew for some time that Ray was not going to be available. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. By the way, I've changed my settings.
Then why did we just hear that?
Well, that's because I put something in incorrect. I was searching for something.
All right. His other question, how would you guys compare Cena's 380-day title run from 06 to 07 to Punk's 434-day title run from 2011 to 2013 in regards to relevance and overall impact?
John Cena was the focal point during that title reign, and CM Punk, I mean, for a good portion of that title run, he was still not positioned as the top guy that they were building everything around. I mean, Cena was still in most main events at that particular time. So, I mean, if you're going to compare them, I mean, Cena was the number one guy, and Punk was not during his title reign. Let's go one more here with Gareth. Thought I'd give this WrestleMania a watch, seeing as this was around the time I stopped watching. First thing that struck me with the Money in the Bank ladder match was, even though it was crowded with Raw, SmackDown, and ECW announced teams, I thought it still managed to flow better than today's Raw setup. I guess this was because there was no apps, vines, touts, or networks to promote. Edge landing on his feet on the outside after falling from the top of the ladder in the ring made me wince. Maybe I'm an age where those are the bumps that I wince more at now. John, I know you always criticize Christian's signature leap over the top rope to the outside to deliver a slap, and rightly so. Couldn't help but think of you seeing that Edge bump. I hope Christian gave Edge some pointers on the landing. The network showed a package of The Condemned starring Austin. Hope you noticed he also time-stamped the period with an affliction top. Yes, it was duly noted. I won't repeat what everyone else has said, but I thought both main events were solid, especially Batista and Undertaker, which surprised me and a lot of others as well. One person I always had to throw my hands up with and say, sorry, I just don't get it, was Mr. Kennedy. I would always remember friends mentioning him to me after I stopped watching the product, but I never got the hype. Were either of you a fan or wonder what might have been with him? Can't say I do. Maybe that's just me, but I've never felt the urge to go back and see what I missed with this guy. I think Kennedy had, I mean, he was someone that there were people in the company that he worked with at the time that were not the biggest fans of working with him, but I think that he did have a certain level of personality, more so I would say in WWE than he displayed in TNA, but you know, he had good and bad with him. And I can't say that, you know, at the time there was momentum behind him. He wasn't just in this role and everyone was rejecting him. There was a lot of following for the guy at this point in 2007, in particular the run he had on SmackDown. And I think it was later when they moved him to Raw that he really started to drown.
Hmm.
And he was not a focused upon guy. I mean, after all the stuff that happened in 2007, I mean, there was the title run. There was the possibility that he was going to end up being Vince's son. I mean, they had big, big plans for this guy that never materialized. And that's why you can look back. This was the peak moment of his WWE tenure and career. So there you go. That is our look back at WrestleMania 23. Thank you for the feedback. As we stated, next week we're reviewing the episode of Raw from April 2nd, 2007. It is the night after WrestleMania 23. How will they react, Wei, to all of the actions of WrestleMania 23?
How will people react to Vince McMahon's bald head?
That's true. Would they even see Vince McMahon's bald head the next night? All right, so that's going to wrap things up. I want to thank everybody for joining us. You can always catch Review Away at liveaudiowrestling.com and all of our archives, which are available at lawradio.proboards.com. They are all up there as you can go back, reminisce about so many great classic events and not so classic events, including many, many WrestleManias. And as well, we have our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fightnetwork. And every week,
youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling.
What did I say?
Fight Network. Nah. You should go to that one too. But if you want all the wrestling content, go to youtube.com/liveaudiowrestling.
I got to start speaking slower, I feel. I feel I race too fast. My head's like in a, it's like it's in Halifax, Ontario or something.
You're like that Money in the Bank match.
Yes. So anyway, that is you're right. I need to scale back. Scale back with the volume.
Maybe I should speed it up. Maybe I'm the Kane Kali.
Well, I work too fast, and maybe you work too slow of a style for some. Yeah. So there's a happy medium somewhere to be found. Maybe next week will be that discovery.
Maybe.
All right, so that finishes things up. YouTube.com/liveaudiowrestling, and I was going to say that each week we drop a new Ask Away video where we take your questions, and we'll have a new video up later this week. And be sure to tune in, folks. It's going to be the biggest law of the year. Sunday night, April the 3rd, our post-WrestleMania show. We're going to have a whole review of WrestleMania, and it will be a roundtable edition of the law. It's not just me, but the real main event. The Donald Trump of the law family is coming. Because he is an attraction. Wei Ting to join us for the show.
Am I going
to
get my head shaved?
Not you, if you're playing Trump.
Okay.
I don't know.
Who would you?
Someone will.
Maybe
mouth.
Whoa. I'm there for that.
Someone's hair will be on the line, perhaps. So you can tune into The Law Sunday night, April the 3rd. And next week, we are going to have a ton of shows coming your way. It is WrestleMania week, and we should probably discuss all of this.
Oh, yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Yeah, we're going to have our usual shows. Of course, this Sunday night, we have The Law scheduled to be joined by Dean Ambrose on that show. Monday, we'll have Review of Raw. And then Wednesday, we've got Review Away, where we're going to discuss the night after WrestleMania 23 Raw. And then I'm planning to have shows Thursday, I think late Friday night. Well, I know late Friday night, we're going to have a show up with a review of TakeOver. Saturday night, Wei Ting and I are going to be back. We're going to have a show discussing the Hall of Fame and anything else I can manage to watch, because I very much want to watch some of the Evolve shows. Ring of Honor's got a show that weekend. So I am turning off everything in my life that weekend. I'm going to try and cover as much of this as possible and drag Wei into watching as much of it as possible, too. But we'll have a show Saturday night. And then, of course, Sunday night, it's a three-hour edition of The Law. And then Monday, if you're in Toronto, there's going to be a live meet and greet with Jason Agnew and Braden Harrington at Bryden's.
If you're lucky enough to get on that list.
Yeah, it's limited. We might already be full at this point, but you can email jason@jasonagnew.com. If you're in Toronto, Bryden's on Bloor is where you can go to watch Raw from the night after Mania with a whole group of wrestling fans. And me and Wei will be back later that night. Am I just going too much here? This sounds like a lot. I'm getting overwhelmed.
This is good for me. I need my itinerary.
Well, some people are taking notes here. And that same night, Wei and I will have a new Review of Raw. And on top of that, Wei, the night after WrestleMania on Review of Raw, we are going to announce the next review away contest.
Oh, we are?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I was supposed to announce this weeks ago to coincide with WrestleMania, and I forgot.
You have a lot going on.
I totally forgot about it. But we talked about this contest before.
Oh, I don't even know what
you I'll remind about. You after, but we'll announce it the night after. We got to have something post-WrestleMania.
Yeah, of course.
And our content, this will be very video-friendly, I think.
Oh, cool. I look forward to that.
So that is what you can look forward to, WrestleMania week.
Do we have any other surprises from...
Oh, there will be lots of surprises, including... there might even be an impromptu surprise party.
Wow.
So maybe keep it locked.
Featuring some extended family members.
You never know who might drop by. But we're going to give you 100 reasons to be around here for WrestleMania week at liveaudiowrestling.com. Just simply have your computer open, have your iTunes ready, and just keep it locked to liveaudiowrestling.com. We are going to have extensive coverage of everything, right down to celebrity sightings to – no, we're not going to go that deep. I'm done. I have had too much caffeine today. I need to go sleep. And Wei, you have to get going because it is, I think you have 1 minute left before your time is up here. So our time is up. Wei's time is down.
Oh, God.
Goodbye, folks. Saliva takes us out.